Warning. The following program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
You have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
Hello, Houston, Galveston, and the world. This is the July 10th edition of After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude. My name is Chris Harris, and I'll be your co-executive producer for this evening.
And I'm Jimmy Carper. I'm the longest-running executive producer of the show.
And I'm Wes Laverne, the newest executive producer of the show.
Yep.
And I don't like these headphones.
Oh.
Well, you're out of luck.
I know, right?
Yeah, because they're all the same.
Yeah.
I guess they're all new.
Because they all work.
They are all new, but I don't like the way they feel.
Oh.
Oh, well. What can we do about it?
You're just not used to something squeezing your head that tight.
I'm usually the one doing the squeezing.
I see. Well, did everyone have a good week?
Thursday was good.
Okay. Can you even tell us why? No,
he
can't.
Got laid.
Oh.
Well, wow, that must have fun. I got that fourth in.
Gee, what's that like?
Other than that, the week was stupid. Just absolutely stupid. I'm glad it's over.
Okay.
I've been branded a woman hater.
What?
I had several issues with several gyno-Americans this past week.
Gyno-Americans?
Yeah.
Okay. The PC term.
Yeah. And, boy, they started to piss me off. And I've been branded by my coworkers that I am a woman hater.
Oh, boy.
Because I just
couldn't... Let's get confirmation on that. Judy!
I challenged the term woman. Oh.
Oh! Oh, you'll pay for that.
Why, she won't find my couch.
If she heard it, you'll pay for that.
No, it was just at a point where I'm like, I have to deal with one more stupid woman. And
all
another
hell
one arrived.
Oh.
And then another one arrived. And it's like, okay.
Uh-huh.
Open mouth, insert foot?
Yeah. At least I was well enough. I didn't start drinking until after work this time.
We're glad of that. We are glad of that. Well, phase one and phase two of the house have been completed. Unfortunately, it's going to be a while till any other phases happen.
Okay.
Yeah. I have to hold off for a while.
Being?
Hmm?
Why?
That's what the lawyer said to do.
Oh.
So.
Oh?
Yeah.
That's confusing.
Yeah, I know. So. Let's just hope that the dust settles quickly.
Mm.
And its state gets settled in the near future.
Ooh, okay.
Is somebody contesting?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but it's no secret that a certain gentleman in Federal Way hates my guts. So he may be delaying things.
Ah. Mm. Toe dragging.
Yeah. Yeah, and just being...
On advice of counsel, I suggest you start taking the fifth at this
moment.
Yes,
I should do that. Mm-hmm. Yes, since we're on the air. Anyway, I'd like to have the contractors on the air.
Okay.
I know. We. It's a fine line because we can't push businesses.
Yeah.
But these are lesbians who run a contract. You know, a construction company, and they're absolutely fantastic.
How does it feel to be a lesbian that knows how to operate power tools?
It's just unbelievable. I can't wait to.
You mean there's some out there that don't?
They've just taken care of everything and just jump right in there. They're incredible. Incredible.
Just to sit down, don't worry your pretty little head, Jimmy. We'll take care of
it. Exactly. Exactly. You know, little thing, you know, in an older house, things pop up, and it's never a problem. Never a problem. Okay, we can do that.
All right.
Just what you like to hear. Okay. We've got Jim Crawford here from Arises, who's going to be on for our quickie. And we have a theater group, and then it's Leather Ties. So let's talk about some of the things going on in the community. First of all, later on today is the best Christmas show in July in Texas. Over at the BRB, directed by David Sawyer. MCs are Don Gill and Anne Marie Gill, featuring Miss Mona and her BRB girls. And special guests, the Austin Baptist women, are going to be here, later on today.
Which is?
Sunday. Yes, indeedy.
Usually you don't have to poke him that hard.
I know, right?
At 7 p.m. at the BRB.
He's not used to getting poked. It has to be a little harder for him to remember.
Yeah, I know it. So, this is a PWA Holiday Charities event benefiting the AIDS Trouble Fund clients. BRB located at 2400 Brazos, right in back of Specs Liquor. Be there. Because this is a really, really good show.
Yeah. And speaking of the Gills, J.P. Gill, I'd like to send out to him a belated happy birthday.
Yes.
His birthday was this past Thursday.
He's the Emperor No More.
Emeritus.
Not no more.
What's the
Emperor?
Term they use?
Not no more.
Not no more.
Not no more.
Mm.
Yeah. So. And his little yellow rubber ducky.
So, happy whatever, 21st plus whatever.
I hear he's
birthday.
Been celebrating since Thursday.
That's what I've heard.
Hmm.
I think my brother has too.
Ah, good.
So. Because in the words of how it went through Facebook between me and my brother,
mm-hmm.
he says he was celebrating his 29th birthday, which I aptly said, if you're 29, I'm the Pope in 21.
Woo. Wow. Wow. Okay.
All right. From the Houston GLBT Community Center, which is the home base for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people and their allies in the metropolitan area and southeast Texas, which was founded by a group of dedicated activists in 96.
Wow.
The center is an all-volunteer, non-profit organization that focuses on serving the community by concentrating on five broad areas. And they don't give the broad areas, but anyway.
I guess I cut it off.
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, sorry.
Their calendar for the...
For this week.
For, looking ahead. On Sunday...
Sunday.
July 11th, the Team Houston is meeting at the center at 4 p.m.
Okay, good Team of Houston.
Then on Tuesday...
Do you know who they are?
I have no idea.
Though that's the group that participates in the Gay Olympics.
Oh, okay.
Gay Games.
Okay, yeah. Gay Games.
Yeah, Gay Games, Gay Olympics, whatever you want to call it these days. Then on Tuesday, July 13th, the monthly Center Dinner convenes at One's a Meal over at 812 Westheimer.
Oh, that's always fun.
Starting at 6:30.
Yeah.
We'll find Jimmy over there.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Mm-hmm. Then we have three different events on July 15th.
Wow.
We'll start with the earliest one. Unchanged Productions hold auditions at the Center from 5 to 8 p.m.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Then at 6 p.m., you have the Center HIV Support Group meeting over at the Center. And then finally, the Center Board of Directors are meeting at 7 p.m. So that's what we're looking at for this week over at the Community Center. Hatch is hosting a film festival. It's their summer movie festival with popcorn, hot dogs, and soft drinks every Tuesday at noon to 5 p.m. from July 13th through August 24th.
I think they're doing this in conjunction with Spry.
I hadn't gotten there yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is open to Hatch youth and Spry participants.
Ah.
Hatch is hosting its first summer film festival. Youth Services Specialist Deb Murphy says two films will be shown every Tuesday afternoon in Room 101 of the GLBT Cultural Center, 401 Bernard Street, beginning on July 13th and running through August 24th. Their schedule, on July 13th, we have Celluloid Closet and Big Eden.
Oh, I love Big Eden.
Oh, one of my favorites.
It's a fairy tale. I just love it.
On July 20th, they're going to show one of my favorites. We're starting off with Children's Hour, and then my favorite movie, The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Deserts.
Woo.
July 27th is Philadelphia and Desert Hearts.
Mm.
August 3rd will be, another one of my favorites, Torch Song Trilogy and Debs.
Wow.
August 10th.
All these classics.
I know. Tell me about it. On August 10th, The Band Played On. Very good movie. And Better Than Chocolate.
Mm.
Here's a really great movie. August 17th, Transamerica. And then In and Out. Then on August 24th, Amy and Jaguar, followed by La Cage Follies.
La Cage Folle.
What he said. The first show will begin at noon with a short introduction and a follow-up by Murphy, who is the former director of the Houston Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. She says that the films were selected in part to teach Hatch youth about gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered history while exposing them to the GLBT culture. That's why we extended an invitation to Spry participants, because they can add to the commentary while educating the youth. It also adds opportunity for the youth to have something to do during summer break, Murphy adds. They will have adequate air conditioning, too, which some of the youth and seniors don't have at home.
Oh.
Now, wait a minute. You're going to have kids and the old group.
Yeah.
So no one's paying for a full price ticket to this thing.
No.
No.
I don't think you have to pay anything.
I don't think so. If there's no mention of
Well, that's good because
if you're a member of Spry or a member of Hatch.
Well, you've got kids and you've got the seniors. It's a matinee anyway, so you're given a discounted ticket anyway. You're not making anything on this deal.
No.
So it's free?
Maybe the popcorn costs.
Okay.
Yeah. Popcorn, hot dogs, hot drinks. We owe a great deal of
gratitude. I'm being polite. I didn't go anywhere with a weenie joke on that.
I know.
Which is a first.
Because it's Hatch. I promise not to touch the weenie jokes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Deb Murphy will be happy about that, too. Yes, Wes?
Moving on.
Yes.
Switchboard training begins in July for the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard of Houston.
Good.
The Montrose Counseling Center is currently accepting applications for the next Gay and Lesbian Switchboard training coming up at the end of July. Because the training encompasses three consecutive weekends, we are only able to hold the trainings on a quarterly basis. The next training will be held on the last Saturday in July, the first two Saturdays in August, as well as the second Sunday in August.
Wow.
Volunteers must go through the entire training, and we strongly recommend that it be done in person. However, if you have a conflict for some of the sessions, some of it may be made up by watching videotapes and reading the manual.
Oh.
You may also wait until the next training session. The trainings held on August 14th and 15th are mandatory as they include crisis intervention and role-playing. Being a switchboard volunteer is a challenging and rewarding experience.
It certainly is. I was there for a long time.
Yeah. You'll receive gratification that comes from helping callers in need, as well as giving back to your community. Volunteers assist callers requesting help or information on referrals to GLBT organizations and friendly businesses, coming out issues, suicide prevention, sexual assault, domestic partner abuse and violence, hate crimes, HIV counseling case management, chemical dependency treatments, and general therapy referrals.
Wow.
To contact us now to join the ranks of our amazing volunteers. They have a spot, let's see, doesn't say a website, but that you can go online and print out a volunteer application form, fill it out, and either drop it off or mail it back to them at MCC volunteer. That's at 401 Bernard Street, second floor, Houston, Texas, 77006. Or you can fax it to them at 713-526-4367.
Okay.
And the website for them is MontroseCounselingCenter.org.
Mm-hmm.
I know the switchboard has one, too, but I don't remember how it's actually written.
I forget that. I just know the number.
Yeah. What is that number?
713-526-3211. 529-3211. Oh, my God.
He was mixing up KPFT with the switchboard.
Yeah, 713-529-3211. 529-3211.
All right.
That's embarrassing.
See, I don't have that problem anymore. I used to have it when I had Q Patrol. Yeah. And I used to get Q Patrol and the radio station confused.
Uh-huh.
And I really hated it during Pledge Drive when I gave the prefix for Q Patrol and the last digits of KPFT. I mean, some poor bastard's going to get a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, I want to give $20 to the queers. And I'll take that credit card number.
Okay.
On Saturday, August 7th, from 9 a.m., way before Jimmy gets up.
Oh, yeah.
To 8 p.m., is going to be the Aresis Day Casino Bus Trip to Cachada. So come join Aresis as we do our second annual day trip to Cachada. We'll be leaving at 10 a.m. and arrive at Cachada around 1. Spend 4 hours gambling, drinking. Oh, good Lord. Nobody's going to be safe.
No.
Eating at the buffet and having a great time before we jump back on the bus and head back to Houston to be back home around 8 p.m.
I love eating at the buffet. Ooh. I don't know.
I didn't realize they declared part of BJ's the buffet.
When I'm there, it's all a buffet.
While on the bus, our host, Royce Woods, and Natasha Nicole Siebert and Craig W. Ray will provide snacks and entertainment. Uh-oh. I smell another Drag in the Bag show on the aisles.
That's because you read a forward.
That, we promise, will keep everyone in stitches. Kind of like this show.
Yeah.
Seats are limited, so get your tickets now. Tickets are $30 if bought on or before July 4th, which has already passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so tickets are now $40. You may reserve your seating and make payments to Aresis through our reigning treasurer, Royce Wood, at rcwood3, that's the number 3, H-O-U, at yahoo.com.
Okay. That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
I think I'm actually going to go there.
You really?
Well, I got a slight conflict. Depends on how much money I have sitting with me.
Yeah. Because
that's also Ace Weekend.
Oh, damn.
And I've never been to Ace Weekend.
Damn.
But I don't think I can afford Ace Weekend, so.
Oh, boy.
So I may have to go to the Aresis thing and then have enough money that I can afford to go. No, that won't work.
No, probably.
All righty, then. Friends, this month's center dinner is one the move.
On the move.
I'm reading it as it's written here.
Okay, sorry.
Let's call Tim up and yell at him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Join us at our new venue, One's a Meal, 812 Westheimer, on Tuesday, July 13th. We begin at 6:30 p.m., but feel free to join us when you can. We usually nosh and chat until 8 or 8:30, so you can check out the menu at www.onesameal.com. We will be multitasking on July 13th. Several individuals who are interested in developing the Center Business Council, mm-hmm. a new group at the center, will join me to begin discussing plans for an organization of GLBT-owned businesses and GLBT business people. Thank you for your support of the
Is
center.
The Chamber of Commerce? Oh.
Yeah.
Six and one half dozen.
I guess.
Thanks for your support of the center and our community, Tim Brookover.
Yeah, good old Tim.
And, it looks like the final one I've got here. Can I get him?
That's not a boy.
I don't care. I still want him.
You can have him. That's not a boy.
Hello.
A boy can come in any age group.
Depends on how you spell it.
Well, this one's spelled B-O-Y. Yeah. Don Kill.
Someone's Freudian slip is showing.
Don Gill Productions presents the Boy of Montrose 2010 contest on Friday, July 16th at 2010. Social will start at 9:30. And
at
the
2010?
July 16th.
Oh.
He screwed up and put at in there, but everyone was trying to ignore
okay,
it.
Okay, never mind.
Close your ears, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
No, just one.
Yeah, the other one, I can't hear either.
Like I was saying, the social starts at 9:30, contest at 10:30. This is going to be directed by Sir Robert Helms.
Ooh.
Your MCs will be Daddy Don Gill and Daddy Lloyd Powell.
Oh, that's going to be good.
This is going to be taking place over at the Ripcord, 715 Fairview, benefiting PWA Holiday Charities working account.
Work it.
For more information and applications, please visit www.boyofmontrose.org.
Yes. Okay.
Chris?
Softball fundraisers at Tony's Corner Pocket.
Woo!
On Sunday.
Sunday.
July 18th from 6 to 9 p.m. They'll be featuring a mud dive for a brand new bicycle,
Ooh.
A cakewalk, drink specials, and spiked lemonade. Have you figured out what a cakewalk is yet?
I have no idea.
It's musical chairs with cake.
What? You sit on the cake?
No, it's not a splash film. I'll find you the YouTube video. You're thinking X-Tube.
Okay.
There'll be another one on Saturday, July 31st from 9 p.m. to midnight.
Mm-hmm.
A mega 50-50 raffle and drawing, drink specials, jello shots in syringes.
Cool.
At least I hope so. Yeah, they've got a syringe next to a parfait.
Oh, my.
Uh-oh.
Raffles with exciting prices and more spiked lemonade.
I see.
It's all taking place at Tony's Corner Pocket at 817 West Dallas. Find them on the web at tonyscornerpocketbar.com. The Empire of the Royal Sovereign Imperial Court of the Single Star, and you know all the rest of the crap they
well,
say
yeah,
at the end of it
in
there.
In fact, we've got him
yeah,
with him, so we're not
yeah,
to do that.
Yeah, he's here. Nancy Reese's. Potluck for the GLBT Seniors and Friends.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, July 20th, beginning at 6:30. Isn't that a little late for them? The location will be the Bethel Church UCC Fellowship Hall, 1107 Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
For more information, contact Tim over at HoustonGLBTCommunityCenter.org. That's Eresis. Theater New West and the Holocaust Museum, Houston, are proud to exempt the present the Laramie Project. This will be going on. No, I was going to give them this one. Remaining presentations are on the 11th, 15th, 17th, 22nd, and 24th. Thursday performances are at 7:30, with Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. The Sunday matinee is at 6 p.m. Yeah. Tickets are $25. Senior 62 and over, and students with ID is 20. For more information, check out theatrenewwest.com. Remember, it's the R-E, the highfalutin way.
Yeah, the pussy way.
Yeah, your mic's not on.
Okay.
Also, don't forget Stage Door Inc.'s production of A Year with Frog and Toad continues on for this weekend. I think next weekend.
Oh.
Very interesting and unusual.
We're becoming the theater
yeah.
show here because after Reese's, we're doing a quickie with the Reese's yeah. tonight, and we've got Upstage Productions. Lobby.
Now, it's a family musical, but you'll find some familiar tones in there. If you know anything about Stage Door, I noticed a couple of them, and they pointed another one out to me that I kind of missed. Also, coming up with them on the weekend of the 23rd, 24th, 25th,
yeah.
Is their production of Alice in Wonderland Jr.
Ooh.
It's Alice in Wonderland produced by kids.
No kidding.
It'll be mainly child performers. And they told me this, and I couldn't believe this.
What?
We've always said how Stage Door likes to put that little extra twist on it.
Oh, yeah.
The Queen of Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just refer to it as the Drag Queen of Hearts.
Oh, my.
How did I know that was coming?
In a children's production in Pasadena.
Is it an adult drag queen?
No. This is an all-child cast.
Wow.
Mainly child. When they did Mulan Jr., there was a couple of adults in there
mm-hmm.
that did play some of the parts and then did kind of some of the, had to do some herding. basically.
Yeah, I'll bet.
During the performance. But I'm not giving it all away, but the Queen of Hearts, let's just say, is the drag Queen of Hearts in this production. And they, normally I would take my niece to this, and she's going to be out of town. So I wasn't planning on going, and then I heard this, and it's like, I'm going.
Yeah.
So I'll be down there for that one.
Okay.
All righty, then.
StageArena.com.
Oh, sorry. Jim Crawford is here.
That's your cue.
Oh. Hi, honey.
Oh, yeah. I feel like Kim Kardashian.
How are you guys? Chris, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I'm sorry.
I've always been cut off.
But you showed up tonight, and I thought, oh, you're just going to hang out with us. But no, you're here for the Orisa segment.
Yes, I'm here because they called.
You need notes.
Well, thank you, yeah, because I don't have anything in front of me. Before I start, I'd like to give a shout-out, JP. To JP's friend, Cauliflower.
Cauliflower, huh?
Yes. He called me on the phone on my way here. So I said, okay, I will use.
So it would be his friend's ears?
Is there any glitter on that cauliflower?
No.
Okay.
No, but we did have a wonderful afternoon. We went to the baseball game.
Oh, how was that?
It was very nice. I was bored to tears.
Of course, it's a baseball game. They're very slow. There's not a lot of action.
There's not. But anyway,
but there's a lot of.
Scratching
and adjusting and
especially they also spit and you have to be against that.
Well, we did have the opportunity where we were sitting. It was Chances down in front of us and the bunnies behind us.
Oh,
so it was more of a social hour. I don't think no one watched the game.
So you're between Muff and Fluff.
I see.
And so everyone was socializing and talking about, you know, the men going up and down the stairs, you know.
How were the straight people taking it?
I thought they were fine. There were no fights.
Good.
Nothing that I could think of. But it was very, very nice. And then Eresis offered a appetizer and a post party, which was very nice over at Gay Nail, Miss Gay Pride, Houston, 2010. And Chris Volk,
sushi.
IPR, yes, of Eresis, and it was very nice, a nice crowd. There was a lot of food, a lot of adult beverages.
There's always a lot of food at an Eresis function.
Yes.
Good food,
yes,
too.
Yes, I was very surprised.
And many refreshing beverages.
Many, many. Chilled, non-chilled.
Overindulged.
Big glass, short glass, no glass.
Exactly. Bodies.
Sometimes shoes.
But I digress. I don't want to get in trouble.
Oh,
that's not digressing, darling.
Oh, good. Because I don't want to get in trouble by people in the organization for saying the wrong thing.
What?
So.
Oh.
No, that's what I'm saying.
We'll do it on the after show.
Yeah. The after show. I just want to be very PC because, you know.
Don't be PC. Be a Mac.
Okay. I like to be a Mac for just a few minutes, but I am here to say, well, thank you to KPFT for allowing us this opportunity to highlight some of our festivities.
Well, we are Her Majesty's radio show.
That's what I heard.
Yes.
That's what I heard. And then when they got the text from the Emperor at the party, I jumped to the chance to come back and say hi to everyone and be on the air. So, you guys have any questions?
Oh, no.
So apparently he didn't hear any of the rude comments that were made about the Emperor a couple weeks ago on the show.
Not on the show, but maybe somewhere else.
Oh, no,
we did.
They were
on
the show.
No, I did. No, some person did them on the show.
Oh,
yeah,
sitting on your right hand side.
Hi.
We'll see. sit close to me. Anyway, I don't want
to,
you know.
If you don't have anything nice to say, sit next to Chris.
Yes, exactly. Well, everybody, let me read what's here because I don't want to be in trouble. Because, you know, I don't want to say the wrong thing.
You are never in trouble.
Good. Well, here we go.
And there's never anything wrong to say here.
No.
Well, good. I'm glad. Hi, Miss Reeves. I haven't seen her in ages. Anyway, July the 16th at 10 p.m. at the BRB, Jody Travis is having a fundraiser called Drink, Drank, Drunk.
Oh.
And those of you who drink, drank, and drunk, make sure you say the right thing to your fellow organization people.
Okay.
I don't want anyone to be in trouble.
Somebody spank him already just so he can get that out of his system.
July the 17th at 8 p.m. at Crocker, Tap Out Tunes, hosted by Natasha Nicole Siebert.
Now, what's Tap Out Tunes?
Songs you sing in the men's bathroom in Minneapolis.
Or they are the final taps as we lay people to rest.
Oh, sorry.
Come on, that's okay.
Yes, that was your outside voice.
Like, that's my outside voice.
Well, it sounds like a lovely little show.
Well, I think so, so too. And that's brought to you by Natasha Nicole Siebert.
I know.
July the 23rd at 8 p.m. at Tony's Corner Pocket.
Yes.
Go Go for Gaga.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, this
I've
one
hearing
here,
about this.
Yes. Hosted by Isabella Rose Mink. She is a hoot.
She is. I met her.
Isn't she sweet?
Just recently, I met her.
Like her a lot. And she's always out in face, which we really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
In face or being faced?
Out in face.
Yes.
You know, she's out there promoting the organization and herself, and we love it. Sunday, July the 25th.
Sunday, oh, Sunday, good, Sunday.
Good. Make sure we have that.
You
in
tickled
there.
The air with the wrong hand.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, this one here I've heard a lot about. This one is being hosted by Her Majesty Kimberly Ann O'Neill.
Oh.
And I think she's bringing something back that has been done previously in the far past.
Mm-hmm.
At 7 p.m. at the BRB, Good Old Southern Gospel meets the Church of the Neon Cactus.
I love that. That is going to be so much
and
fun.
And from what I've been hearing from Kimberly, it's going to be a full-out production.
Oh, good.
I mean, everybody's going to be doing something.
Good.
So make sure that you're there for that. That's July 25th.
Okay.
July's
that's a Sunday, now, Sunday, yes.
Now, where did this list come from?
Because can hand them out of
oh, because yeah, July the 28th is my birthday.
Oh, is it?
I'll be turning 49.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you believe that?
No.
49.
How did that happen?
I don't know. But no gifts are necessary.
Okay.
Because I don't want nothing that somebody has to get. Anyway, July the 30th.
Yes.
At 11:30 p.m. at Chances.
Uh-huh.
I'll have to have a nap before I go.
Oh, I know.
King of King Contest Preliminaries.
They always have those things so late.
I know. And that's old people.
I know.
I have to have a nap, people. Okay, remember that.
Yeah.
Here, I'll give you the senior event again, 6:30.
There you go.
There you go. That's for us.
That's right after the Blue Plate Special.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You go
that
there,
is
then,
the Blue Plate Special.
Well,
then you got Matlock or Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Murder, She Wrote.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, this one is being hosted by the IPR Chris Volk.
Oh.
So, and this is something that she has done previously.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very pleased with all of that.
Okay.
Oh, why was this scratched out?
Because I have a better one.
Oh.
By Her Majesty.
Oh, you know she's out of town.
Is she now?
She's in Oklahoma for coronation.
Wow.
Her, Susan, and Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did I tell you that about the story about Crystal?
No.
Well, oh.
If it's a story about Crystal, I want to hear it.
We were doing a fundraiser at George's,
mm-hmm.
and it was Peasants Weekend. And they had the pictures of Sherry and Falcon, and we were to throw balls at the face to knock them over.
Huh.
Well, I said, I bet you I can hit people. So, mm-hmm. People gave me money.
Uh-huh.
So, they blindfold me, twist. So I go, and I just throw it, blindfolded and anything. And the next thing I told, I said, I threw it like that, and it just smacked her right in the neck.
Oh!
The whole place went wild. So, I threw it again, and she said that she was hiding. So, I threw it again, and I missed. I threw it again. And then I threw it again and hit her. Boom! Right, one more time. And so I have an autograph out in my car. So anyway, sorry about that. Well, she's out of town, so she won't hear this. So I don't care. Anyway.
Because nobody will tell her. No.
Mm-hmm. Now, hello, everyone. Because the reason why I was asking was because I heard conflicting information about this. But I'll go ahead and say it anyway, since she was the one that sent the email.
Okay.
Consider it an electronic proclamation.
Yeah, that's true. As you know, Empress shy and put in place this proclamation. It's something that the court does, you know, to raise money each year for charity. Well, she has the reigning monarchs, the emperor and empress, to host a fire and ice ball during their reign.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this year it's going to be on the 31st.
Of July.
Of July. And it's going to be right after my birthday. Presents are not necessary. It's going to be a bit different, she says, than in past balls. That it's going to be a comedy show.
Oh.
It's going to be light and airy and full of talent.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be called Lifestyles of the Not-So-Rich and Famous.
Yes.
And I have the little flyer here. That's cool. That reminds me back home. Anyway, it's going to be at 8 p.m. Saturday, July 31st, the new barn.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Back there in the back at 1100 Westheimer, Houston, Texas.
That's right.
And so, all you hillbillies.
That's the party room of chances.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be production numbers.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be hot dogs and a barbecue bar.
Ooh.
With all the fixins. So the tickets are on sale for $15 in advance,
mm-hmm.
$20 at the door,
mm-hmm.
and there's going to be tables for sale as well. And those are limited, and those are $100, mm-hmm. which seats four. So, and so you can have front row seating for all the production numbers.
Yeah.
I think they're having wait staff for them, those tables, aren't they, as well?
Yeah,
I think so.
Let me see.
Are those the heckler's tables?
I think it was mentioned.
Oh, that's Robbie. Okay. If you are interested, that could be true. But it doesn't say that in the email, and I was not privy to the information.
I was trying to remember back from when somebody...
Yeah. Well, it could be true. And if you're interested in purchasing a table, please contact who? Falcon. As soon as possible at falcon_eresis. Get your pencils ready. ERESICSS.
That's or call him right now. It's
oh, hold on. I have the number. Wouldn't that be?
Wouldn't he love
that? Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. I won't do that to you. No, not me. Anyway.
7-1.
Chris would.
I know Chris would. It's at yahoo.com. That's falcon_eresis@yahoo.com. So he can reserve those tables for those chosen ones.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Mm-hmm. The show will be at the barn, don't forget, behind Chances, around 8 o'clock, and all the money raised at this event will go to Legacy Community Health Services.
Great.
Wow.
That's nice.
Oh, isn't that sweet? Mm-hmm. I just thought so. How they all band together and come out and do this fire and ice ball. I love how this organization works.
See,
there's no animosity with no one. So come out for a knee slapping, hoop hollering, good time, yeehaw, Miss Her Majesty Sherry Ann Boughton, Empress 26. Oh,
I
miss
Sherry.
Me too.
She's
so sweet, and her wife.
Oh,
Susan.
Yes. Oh my God.
So active.
Yeah.
So active, and this. But you know, sometimes being so active, others, you know, they just.
But I've seen the metamorphosis of
yes,
Sherry.
Haven't you?
Yeah, because when I first met her,
mm-hmm.
she would not open her mouth. She sat in the corner and. You know, she just wouldn't do anything. And then she's gradually started doing a number or two,
mm-hmm.
and now she's the Empress. It's amazing.
I know. It really is. And she's doing a very, very good job.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a real-life Cinderella story.
It is.
I'm just all warm and fuzzy inside.
I just love her.
You change your profile so you're warm and fuzzy on the outside.
I'm always warm and fuzzy. My number. Now, okay. Now, the welcome to the Royal Road Trip. Now, this I heard about, and this is kind of different, and I kind of like this.
Because you're getting rid of Falcon. But he's coming back.
That didn't come from me. No grievances filed against me. So for one day, the seven courts of Texas and the court of Oklahoma, which Sherry and Susan and Crystal are at, will be doing a monarch exchange. So those of you who don't know the whole monarchy thing, you know, we all play a game called, you know, Emperor and Empress. And we have court titles, yada ying, yada you.
And it's all to raise money. Yeah, and that's what it's all about.
It really
Texas is.
But
Texas is kind of unique because all the courts are very close to each other.
Yes, yes. In fact, we have Emperor Babies in town.
Mm-hmm.
So, I won't say that he's seeing Emperor JP. Oh, did that come out of my mouth?
Oh, is he now?
I know. Anyway, I know. Well, the plot thickens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, anyway, Falcon is going to... Is this from Falcon?
It could be.
Knows.
I think it is. This one's from Falcon, I think, because...
Yeah, there's typos.
Oh. Okay. Anywhere. He's going to Corpus Christi.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry will be going to Dallas. Mm-hmm. And Houston will be playing host to Emperor Jeff Germany of Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And Empress Bree Williams of Corpus Christi.
Oh.
So is that sweet?
That is sweet.
That really is. That's something different now.
Uh-huh. You know?
And so we'll be having a show featuring traveling or vacation theme songs.
Nice.
So
on the road again.
Yeah, they need to be on the road. Anyway, come on out and greet our visiting monarchs and show them the great Houston hospitality. Now, it's going to be Saturday, July 24th, right before my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
It's be at 8 o'clock at EJ's Bar, 2517 Rouse Strip. Ralph Strip. Yeah, they have strippers. Ralph Street.
You forgot to mention no birthday presents for you.
Yes, no birthday presents are necessary.
But I've already ordered the deglitterer for you.
Oh, speaking of, we all had the Astros shirts.
Yes.
And, you know, Cubby.
Yes.
Bedazzled them all in stone.
Oh, yes, I saw the pictures on Facebook.
Okay, yes.
And the hats.
Yes, yes, the hats were bedazzled. Oh, the shirts were bedazzled.
Bedazzled nothing. Those things sparkled to where you couldn't see them.
Thank you, exactly. But we got a lot of compliments from them.
Well, that's a lot of work doing that.
Yeah,
from blinding
you know.
The teams from when the light hit, you know. I can't get to the
thumb. But he enjoys doing
okay.
That.
All right.
Okay.
I just hope my homophobic coworker saw all the gays there. She was at the game.
Oh.
Okay.
I could barely contain myself this week because I told a couple of my other coworkers about it, and it was like,
ooh. Okay.
Did I mention the fact how dashing it looks that both you and Judy dressed alike?
It was just pure coincidence.
You did.
Both have excellent tasting clothing.
You both have the Homoland Security t-shirts.
Yes, we do.
Uh-huh.
My goodness.
Well, at any rate.
Mm-hmm.
I think
we have
if I wore pink, you'd blame it on Jimmy. So
yeah,
well,
I wore gray.
Yeah, but the pink would clash with the blue of your hair.
True.
True.
Well, before I go, I want to thank you two, thank you three, thank you four for allowing me to come and talk and share what the organization is doing.
You need to show up more often.
Well, you know what? The next time maybe I'll come for a Q&A.
Okay.
Just hang out and see what's going on. If you have any questions or
yeah.
You know,
just
you know,
dish dirt.
Yeah, there we go. Because we haven't done that in a long, long time.
We got a fifth Saturday coming up.
Work on some blind items. You know, that way you can mention that stuff happened, but don't mention names so people can try and guess them.
Okay.
I have a lot of that. And you and I need to go. Well, us three need to go to Tony's one night.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
To see the boys.
Gotcha.
Okay. So let me know when you want to go. Okay.
All right. Up next is Upstage. For now, a little piece of music.
Okay.
Well, I'm really going down, down on my knees. Baby really wants it bad, and I really ain't to please. Well, it's just out of boot camp. Now it's Methotown Tram. And I know, baby, you'll need it, a better man. Oh, now, baby's wearing flip-flops, and baby got a flat top.
got a grease on the chin. Feeling down around the fence. White hunters got a free flow. Roll it out of the elbow. Everybody wants to put a hand on it. Chalkboard heart complete with the devil's milk. Family's cause it may not happen no more. Left on the floor. Oh, I'm really going down. Got me down in the dirt. Feel the meat on the bone. Pray about it in church. Don't you grow out your flat top. Let me hear you say pop. And I know, baby, you will leave here a better man. Said I'm down in the dirt. Baby really wants it bad. Baby really made me work. Don't you grow out your flat top. Let me hear you say pop. And I know
Hi, Judy.
Hi, honey. How are you?
I'm fine. Well, you got a lot of people in there with you tonight.
I do. I love big crowds.
I'm not going there.
Thank you.
I'll leave it for Chris to do later.
I have no doubt that he'll get around to it, so to speak.
So who do you have with you tonight?
We have Upstage Theater here tonight.
Upstage?
Upstage, yes.
Who are they upstaging?
We have, just about anybody who gets in their way, honey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, and they're all awake, too.
There's a first.
There you go. We have Barbara Bunny Hartman here, who directed a new show. While the Lights Were Out, which opened this weekend, right?
Yes.
We opened.
Well, why were the lights out? Couldn't they be on?
Well,
while y'all
know,
did this play?
I tell you, she directed it. I didn't.
Isn't it better to see the play with the lights on? I mean, come on.
Some plays are better seen in the dark.
A storm occurs during the play, and the lights go out, and then things happen during that period of time that we have to find out what it is by the end of the play.
Ah. Sounds like a mystery.
So we get to sit in the dark and watch it?
Yeah. Put some ears on.
No, well, you don't sit in the dark to watch it.
There you go. Now she's got her ears on, so she can hear me.
I got my ears on. That's cool.
Uh-oh. Be careful. She can hear us.
This is a comedy mystery by Jack Sharkey. Who wrote a lot of these kinds of mysteries, which are sort of a spoof on mystery and present ridiculous situations. And some of his mysteries, nobody actually dies. In this one, someone actually does die.
Ah.
And is actually murdered. So we have 14 people in the cast. Unfortunately, not all of them could be here tonight, so we only have a few of them.
So they have 14 people in the cast, so you can only run the show 14 days before you run out of actors. Okay. That works. Okay.
Yeah, that last like day, that last right. person, the last person is having a hard time.
They are. They have bunches of parts there.
I'm not telling you.
Well, this is being performed at Upstage Theater, which is at 1703 Heights Boulevard in Lambert Hall.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Great
place. And
they
don't have a huge stage, so you can imagine that putting 14 people on stage with furniture is an exercise in traffic control.
Wow.
So we had quite a lot of fun doing that.
So who do we have with us tonight?
Well, tonight we have several, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the characters.
I did that earlier. I could have just
Listen, every time I'm going to talk to these people, I have to count heads, you know, to make sure they're all there.
Yeah.
So if they would like to introduce themselves, I would appreciate it.
Let's start with. Yeah, right over
okay,
here.
My name is Heather Gabriel, and I play B.B. Cavendish.
My name is Christophe Ford, and I play the character of Pia Puri.
I'm Emma Stereo, and I play the annoyingly effervescent Chloe Custardine.
Chloe
Custardine.
I thought I heard that. That tells you something about the play, doesn't it?
Uh-huh. I'm Catherine Hyke, and I play the not well liked housekeeper, Nancy. Nice.
Cannot imagine that.
No, but housekeeper, not well liked.
Yeah. It's not true in real life, I hope.
No.
No.
I'm Alan Johnson, and I'm not only awake, but I'm stone cold sober, and I play the part of Detective Inspector Benjamin Braddock.
Would one assume that sober, stone cold, etc., is not his normal way of life?
That's what it sounds like to me.
Yes, it is.
He chose to point it out.
He didn't come out and get drunk with some of us last night.
I know. Everybody.
He went home and got drunk by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. They told me 34 years ago I'm just going to find him a drunk. I'm sorry. Moving right along.
Yep.
He's not talking. Okay.
This next one is this young lady here.
I'm Lindsay Smith, and I play the incredibly intelligent Alma Threedle.
Threedle, okay. And who is our resident photographer, just to keep up with the circle here?
Quad.
Who?
His name is Quad Wren.
Quad, okay.
Quad Wren.
He's doing photographs of everyone.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's a cute blonde sitting in the background.
Careful,
right
it's Bunny's son.
Oh.
I keep telling you that.
You guys, every time I bring him here, you all call him so
it's
cute.
Okay. It's okay.
I'm sorry.
My role is a protector of him.
Are you sure? Thank you, Judy.
Sure, Corey, I've protected him since he was, 14? Like yeah, so I'll always be doing it.
Hey, there's no rule against looking. Just don't touch.
Unless his mother's in the room.
And I'm sure he's flattered as well. Are you not?
Are you flattered?
I'm always flattered.
He's always flattered. Look at that facial hair. I'm not used to the facial hair.
Yeah, he's growing up, you know.
That's what they tell me.
We would like to read a couple of scenes for you, but before we do that, I want to reiterate that the show runs through July 24th, so we have two more weekends, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 o'clock. And you can get reservations on the website.
She's reading as fast as she can. Go ahead.
I know, because I don't know this theater as well as some of the others.
Well, there's a phone number. That'll
there's
work.
A phone number. Box office phone number is 713-838-7191.
Yay.
And we're going to have a fun time. It's a fun play. So I would like for Heather and Pierre... So go ahead and read their scene.
Can they do this in 5 minutes or less?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do one scene and then we'll do that.
Guess who?
What are you doing here?
Well, my sweet BB sojourns, can Pierre be far behind?
Oh, but this is impossible. I thought you'd returned home to Paris after I signed our engagement. Can't you take no for an answer?
Your lips may say no, but the look in your eyes tells me...
A thousand times no. Now stop trying to get your arms about me. You're worse than Pepe Le Pew.
But ma chérie, what man could resist your charm, your loveliness, your...
Oh, for the last time, Pierre, lay off. Our engagement is over. Finished. Done. Fini.
You cannot mean that.
Of course I can. What does it take to get through to you? Oh, I'll admit I was enraptured with you for a while. You looked so dashing in your naval uniform. But ever since your operation, you've let yourself go something terrible. Just look at those trousers of yours. What fashion designer would dare let herself be seen in public with you?
We need not be seen in public, Dean. We shall have the delicious secret romance, meeting only by moonlight beneath the whispering palm trees.
Stop! Enough! What's done is done. It can never more be between us.
And why can it not, may I ask?
Because I'm engaged to marry Algernon.
Pah! A momentary aberration on your part. Algernon is a boy. A woman such as you requires the masterly romancing of a man of the world.
You are wrong, Pierre. What I need is a husband who knows how to groom himself perfectly for every social occasion.
And there are quite a few clues in that scene.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any correlation between his operation and the sound of his voice? That's the first thing that came to mind. Okay, then. So I'm assuming there's not. Okay.
Yes. Well, that's a lot
I'm
of
I'm so glad I really know you, dear. But you'll never read that line again, yeah. Same. All right, so there were lots of clues in there?
Yeah, there's quite a few things that are mentioned during that scene that come up later. And
I should listen better.
Serve as part of the information that solves the eventual murder.
This isn't any audience participation, is it?
No.
Oh, thank you, Jesus. I just never mind. I won't go there.
No audience participation.
I did
except for applauding and laughing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So what do the tickets cost for this production?
$15.
Not a bad deal.
And I do believe they have a student and senior discount of 13, I think it is.
I finally qualify, what can I say? I qualify for everything.
And I think they have group rates, but all that stuff is on the website. It's upstagedtheater.org.
See, you did know it. You didn't have to find it.
Yeah.
All right. And if I remember one more time quickly, because we're going to do PSAs in just a second and come back.
Doesn't have to be quickly. You've got a minute or two.
Well, I have to say quickly to Bunny.
713-838-7191. It's Upstage Theater.
And it runs when?
Runs through July 4th on Fridays and Saturdays. 24th, I mean.
I'm so sorry.
Fridays and Saturdays. So next weekend and the weekend following.
All right. Sounds
four
wonderful.
Four more performances.
Okay. We're going to step out, do a couple PSAs, and we'll be right back.
The Cuba Solidarity Committee invites you to a party. We have prepared a party for you to share friendship, solidarity, and support for the Pastors for Peace humanitarian aid to the people of Cuba.
All year long, you have worked tirelessly for justice and peace. Couldn't it be incredible to take a break to party and dance in support of a noble cause?
This is your chance.
Wear your dancing shoes and bring lots of energy.
Enjoy a night of music, food, and dance.
Vengan todos a bailar y divertirse.
Saturday, July 10th. From 7 to 11 p.m.
at the Houston Institute for Culture, 708 Telephone Road.
For more info, call Ayana at 832-704-1007. Brought to you by the Cuba Solidarity Committee.
KPFT, Houston.
Solo tengo la luna, no tengo ni esta fortuna, pero me sobra cariño y me sobra la
Family Promised in Southeast Harris County is holding a fundraiser at both Casa Olays in Pasadena on Friday, July 16th from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Contact Hank at Family Promise at 281-991-1084 to get your flyer for the fundraiser. A portion of your bill will go to Family Promise's work with homeless families. Get your flyer and come hungry. KPFT Houston.
Listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude here on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, always the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
Oh, my God, you took a breath.
Well, yeah. I have to tell you, it's... We had a person come. You know, usually we get food here at the station during pledge drives. And usually when you're on this late, you get nothing.
Yeah.
But a new restaurant opened up over here, Muffin Man. And he came in here slinging a pot of chicken tortilla soup.
Ooh.
And it's got the cilantro's got a little burn in my back of my throat, so I had to take a breath. But it was very good soup.
I wouldn't know. I didn't get any.
Where is this place?
Oh, don't feel
well,
like the
you know,
when
you're saying about not getting any, the same reason
well,
you don't get any,
soup.
You need to talk
soup.
To Sean.
I saw the pot. It was pretty big.
Yeah, did Jimmy get some? He hasn't had dinner.
It's just up the street from CC's, basically.
Oh, I see.
A couple doors behind the flower shop on the other side.
Hollywood.
Yeah,
well, it's kind of... You go to the flower shop, and then five doors behind the flower shop over there.
Yeah.
On the side there.
Okay.
And they're actually...
What do they serve, other than soup?
Muffins. It's called the Muffin Man.
Okay. I see crepes.
Crepes and biscuits. And they're open late, you know. We can go there after the show.
All right.
All righty then.
Oh, no, we can't. I'm sorry. They're closed on Sunday.
Okay.
It's only Wednesday to Saturday affair.
Okay.
Which is why he's here.
Okay.
So, cool. Yeah, so we have to thank them for feeding the horde out there.
Yeah, and thanks, Horde, for not saving me any.
The horde, that's Horde with a D.
So, back to the theater group, already in progress then.
Hi, Judy.
Hi, honey. Remember us?
Yeah.
Okay,
I think
we're
so.
Still here. I don't care if you do or not. No, actually, we're here with Upstage Theater. Barbara, Bunny, when did the Barbara get into the direct advice?
It's always been Barbara really? S. Hartman, but recently I started putting my nickname, which everybody calls me anyway, in the middle.
Well, that's okay. Now some people know we know each other.
Yeah.
But thank you for the intro anyway, Heather. No, anyway. So, okay, we're talking about While the Lights Were Out by Jack Sharkey, which is a show you started this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me again when it runs. Tell me
how it's running through July 24th. Two more weekends. Friday and Saturday nights at 8 p.m. at Lambert Hall at 1703 Heights Boulevard.
Ooh, she learns fast.
She sure does.
Wow.
We're so proud of her.
I sure can.
Wow. Okay. See me on September 19th.
You know I can learn lines. I've learned them for you before.
I know. And she learns most all of them. I'm trying to cast my show in the middle of this. So you had another scene you wanted to do?
Sure.
All right.
I would like, let's go ahead and do a scene. The scene is actually between the housekeeper and the Lord of the Manor. However, the actor who is playing the Lord of the Manor is not with us tonight. So Alan Johnson, who plays the detective, is going to read Lord Clive's lines for Nancy Stafford, with Nancy Stafford.
Okay.
Lord Clive, I've just come from the kitchen and...
He has to find the page first.
If it's about the mutton, Stafford...
It's about Mimosa.
Is she complaining or what?
No, of course not. She's not complaining, sir. I am.
About what? If you find your workload too strenuous or your wages insufficient, let me remind you that there are women aplenty who wouldn't mind a cushy job as a housekeeper on this estate.
My task and compensation are quite suitable, thank you. What I'm complaining about is that it's not only improper in a well-run household to have the parlourmaid do the cooking, it's also risky when that maid is inexperienced in the preparation of food, such as mimosa.
Nonsense. Anyone can cook a leg of mutton. Cooks are expensive. But I do intend to interview some applicants to replace our recently departed Dora. One of these days. But not this week. I'm far too busy.
With your hobby again?
Not again, still. And I don't appreciate the interruption.
Yes, sir. Whatever you say, sir.
And see the mimosa doesn't go berserk with a spice rack this time. Just nice, plain, baked mutton. With none of her Jamaican adornments. Understand?
I'm certain she won't, sir. Not after the last time.
I did not throw that leg of mutton at her. I was brandishing it at her and it slipped out of my hand. Miss Stafford! Nancy! Drat that woman. Street and serene on the surface, but a nasty heart deep inside her. Nasty heart.
Thank you.
Okay, that's great.
That's quite well.
Okay. All right.
And then I would like for Amnesty. Corey, do you have a script? Somebody hand you a script?
No, I'm sure I can look on with somebody else.
It's page 28 and 29.
Amnesty, who plays our ingenue, is going to read a scene with my son, who is taking the place of Chris George Keller, who normally plays the role of Algernon.
Where are we starting?
Rather a turbulent welcome for you and your brother. At the bottom of 28, kind of.
Okay, all right. Rather turbulent welcome for you and your mother, Chloe.
Things always tend to grow turbulent when mother is around, I'm afraid.
The absolute cheek of that Frenchman to come here knowing I'm affianced to Bibi.
Still and all, it's easy to understand how he feels, Algy. When one has a love that seems unattainable, it somehow becomes all the more attractive.
I know what you mean. Oh, my dearest darling.
My love.
My sweet.
Algy.
Chloe.
We'd best be careful. Someone might see.
I don't care anymore. Let them see. If Father won't approve of our being wed, I'll marry you anyway. Damn that stupid inheritance.
Now, Algy, be practical. There is no way you could support a wife without your father's money. I mean, darling, you're not good at anything. What possible kind of employment could you secure?
But I can't endure being without you, Chloe. If Father didn't have that silly notion about consanguinity, I don't even know what that word is.
Consanguinity. But that's ridiculous, Algy. He knows I'm mother's adopted daughter. It's not as if we shared the same bloodline, even though we are technically cousins.
Father insists that we should... that it would be scandalous nevertheless. I begged, urged, pleaded.
Threatened?
Chloe, what a thing to suggest.
Well, nothing else seems to dent his stubborn hide.
Please don't cry, darling. Everything will be all right, and soon, I promise.
Algy, there's nothing short of death would get you your inheritance. How can everything be all right soon? How?
Here, now, don't worry your pretty little head about such mundane matters. Just trust me and keep on loving me, and soon we'll have nothing to worry about.
You sound so certain, darling. Suddenly, I'm afraid.
Well, don't be. I have a plan.
What plan? They're coming back.
Now that Corey's had a rehearsal, you want to do the scene? All right. That was interesting. None of the scenes, actually, they don't go together at all. It's like three different plays.
It really is.
Which really kind of is intriguing, actually.
I like that little interjection he had there.
Yes. I'd like to see how it all meshes together.
Yeah, that would be fun. Each one of these scenes sets it up. And we have a bunch of little scenes at the beginning. The first act is a bunch of little scenes. Mm-hmm. And each one has some information that you're going to need later to understand how the mystery...
Oh, damn, I have to think about this?
Oh, yes. Jimmy, you have
to
think.
The first thing you have to do, Jimmy, is stay awake. Is that my out loud voice? The mic's hot. Oh, wow.
And Jimmy, actually think?
But, you know, I'm very familiar with this play, and I still can't figure out if Chloe and Algy are actually related or not.
Ew. Ew.
I didn't need that.
It stated that she's a doctor.
Wait a minute. They were in her rehearsals how long?
But
how many times has he heard?
Technically related.
Technically related because his mother's sister adopted her. His mother's sister adopted her.
So they're distant, almost cousins.
Babies.
I like to think it's
incestuous. Does the play long run? Does it run long enough for that to happen?
I don't think so.
And do we get to see the scene where he actually slips with the mutton?
No.
Oh.
We only get to hear it described.
Oh, okay.
Well, that was good.
And the result of it as well.
Yes.
Yes, because there's a nice big bruise involved. Yes.
We get to see
that. Okay, well, that's a start, I guess.
I guess.
You can't trust that flying mutton.
I know.
Well, I have one more person who would like to read part of her scene, and she's explaining, in effect, as to why Pierre's pants are wrinkled. But you won't hear about that
operation.
You'll just hear what the cause of it is. I guess, right?
I don't know. We'll find out, won't we?
Anyway, it's Alma Threedle, played by Lindsay Smith.
My college roommate, of whom Ben spoke, had taken this job as a hotel maid. But about that same time, she needed an operation. A cervical laminectomy with fusion. Unfortunately, there's a side effect to this surgery which most neurosurgeons never think to warn their patients. My friend lost her job at the hotel because of it. Because she can no longer change the pillow casings when making up rooms.
And just what is a cervical laminectomy with fusion, anyhow?
A disc is ruptured between two of the vertebrae in the neck, causing pain and oftentimes paralysis as it presses on the spinal nerves there. It is vital that this disc be surgically removed and the two vertebrae surrounding it fused together, usually with a small sliver of bone from the hip, all that might ensue paralysis or even death. There are 7 vertebrae in the neck. After the fusion in effect, the person now has only 6 flexible vertebrae, since 2 now move as 1. It prevents the person's chin from reaching the person's chest.
Therefore, the person cannot hold anything between his chin and chest. And that is the reason that Pierre's pants are wrinkled.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a really...
And that all fits in together if you come and see the play.
I have a really quick question. Mm-hmm. Who wants to hold something between their chin and their chest?
Did you ever try to put a pillowcase on a pillow without holding the pillow between your chin and chest?
No, I was taught by a real nurse how to do it.
Oh!
Game with the oranges.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't.
I didn't do that.
You never played the game with the oranges. That's a fun game.
It sure is.
I can't. My neck is. Wow, it's really definitely turning out to be a fascinating play in parts. And it runs when, and how can you reach people
again? It runs 2 more weekends through July 24th at 8 p.m. at Upstage Theater in Lambert Hall at 1703 Heights Boulevard.
I love Lambert Hall.
Yes, Lambert Hall is a fun place to.
Yes, and it's so close in.
I love it even better when you don't have to push me up the ramp in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
So you can find out about tickets at their website, which is upstagetheater.org.
Mm-hmm.
And you can order tickets through the box office at 713-838-7191.
Yay.
Cool.
All right. Any last-minute comments from the Peanut Gallery?
Yeah. tell them how much fun it was having your director push you around stage.
Go ahead. You can be honest. I'll protect you.
Look at this spruce.
Oh. That looks kind of like a leg of lamb.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. This is the we had to, see what it would look like if you got hit by a leg of
this
mutton.
This is the inspiration for the makeup job. Yeah.
I volunteered.
Took
on for the team
too, you are really good to your director. I mean, personally, I would have hit the tech guy or something. I mean, that's... Oh, hi, is Corey in the room? No. My stage manager, better still.
Oh, yeah, he's not here to
defend. He's not here.
Thank God. Sam.
Oh, my God. Okay, that makes it even more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that hit me with the button.
Let's trash him.
And where is that little piece of whatever?
Probably.
Yeah, passed out something.
No,
yeah,
passed
that
out
too.
More like it, huh?
Yeah, probably. I'm not going there, hey. What do I know? Anyway,
I would like to mention that this show has really been kind of a group effort. We've had some help from Heather for costuming and making sure people had the right kind of clothes on. And
or any clothes at all.
Exactly. Right. Any clothes at all.
You gotta
I did campaign the naked version of the show.
We did.
Yeah. Bunny said no.
Yeah, she said
you
no.
know, Bunny's funny that way.
Then I said lingerie version, and she turned that one down, too.
Yeah, wasn't having it.
Yeah.
Wow. Chris helped us get some nice summer furniture to put on the stage.
I tried to do the streaking version, but...
Oh, you're on that again.
Yeah, that stage is high, honey.
Yeah, and if you fall, you might
need
something.
You could, yes.
Yeah,
I
but
don't
want
to talk about that.
Yeah, if you got that around, you pack the house. You pack the, absolutely pack the house.
That's
yes.
True. I guess I'll just have to do it with an outstanding story and acting, won't I?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a thought. All right. Very glad. Very glad y'all came tonight.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Tell the rest of your cast they don't know what they missed.
They don't.
But they can go on the web and they can listen to it.
Yep.
And probably Monday or Tuesday or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something
and,
like that.
Yeah.
Webcast on Monday or Tuesday.
That's right. They can do, I think they keep it on 30 days.
They do.
At KPFT. Oh, yeah. And, of course, GCAM keeps them forever, but that's okay, too. So they can find out how much fun y'all had and what they missed. And
uh-huh.
Put it over them in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, yay. That'll be good.
Yeah.
Well,
and hopefully, Jimmy and I'll see y'all
that?
There one night.
Excellent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's nice to be here with Jimmy again.
It's nice to be, and it's nice to have you here. And I hope you're going to lease that program with me so
sure,
I can announce
I'll
it next
I'll
week.
Leave the program.
Pushing on that.
Yeah.
I'll leave the program with you. We'll see if
please.
I can put it through pages going in the right direction.
No,
that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
No problem.
Do you have music for us?
Yes, I do.
Get some good ones.
And then we got leather ties up next.
Okay.
Ooh, have a great tie one. Up with leather.
No good for you. I'm only trying hard to be true.
Good evening. Welcome to Leather Ties After Hours. I'm Daddy Bear Robert, along with my co-host, Master Buzz Lawson.
Hello.
And the music we're listening tonight is all going to be off of one album, Andy Bell, everybody's favorite fag, the lead singer from Erasure. This is his second solo album. It's called Nonstop. It was just released. I promised Slave Kirby that I would play it at the pool party, and I forgot, so I brought it tonight so we can play it for Kirby.
Yeah, he's probably listening over the computer, so...
Yeah. So, Kirby, if you're listening over the computer, this is it. And set your bass and your treble all the way back to the perfect balance, because this album is perfectly balanced, and otherwise you'll blow the speakers.
he doesn't have that option on the computer.
Yeah. So... tonight, I'm thinking we need to revisit a few things. The summer season is in full swing. There are a lot of different leather events and BDSM events going on all summer and in the fall. Everything from IML.
IML's over with.
Well, yeah, but it's a little late for that. But yeah, IML was last month. But there are a lot of other leather events coming up in the summer and in the fall. Leather/bear events, because some of them fall into both categories. So, kind of like, oh gosh, what's that one? I'm thinking in San Francisco, there's this big leather bear event.
Dory Alley?
No, not Dory Alley, but that's coming up too. But so, I thought what we would do is go over some things concerning the different cultures and subcultures within the overall concept of what we call a leather community. And some of the do's and don'ts, where these different communities come from, these different cultures come from. I say community. Buzz doesn't like the word. He says cultures, not communities, because it's also very fractured. It's not really a community in his words. Am I correct?
You're close.
Okay. But we're going to talk about the differences between the leather culture, the BDSM culture, the fetish culture. We're going to explain a few things, go over a few things, some basics. That when you go to one of these events or you're at a public event like the Boy Montrose contest next weekend, that we don't faux pas and step on anybody's boots.
Well, we will anyway.
Yeah, but you know, if you step on boots, just remember they're probably still toes. You're not hurting them. Just so stomp. I don't care. Yeah,
when you step on somebody's boots, at least say excuse me.
Yes, or find a good bootlicker and have them clean it for you. Yeah.
acknowledge.
Or if you are a good bootlicker, just stomp on boots and start licking, babe.
acknowledge it and beg to be forgiven for it. You will be forgiven if you ask. You won't if you don't.
Yes. So, I'm going to let Buzz start with this. This is an essay, a treatise, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, what you said.
That Buzz has entitled Twisted Tines, as in the tines of a fork.
I'm going to start by reading the entire text, and then we'll go over it and talk. So I'm going to... sneak out a whole bunch of airtime here.
And do also keep in mind, if you want to get a downloadable copy of Twisted Tines,
we can make it available.
It is available on the HoustonLeatherBoys.net. If you go into their reading material, their library archives, you will find a copy of Twisted Tines if you want to download this and keep a copy or read it yourself.
They have all of the material that we're going over tonight.
So, with no further fanfare... Master Buzz Lawson.
Somewhere along the way, it was decided that several paths should come together, and in making this happen, roads which should have remained separate developed an inappropriate reverse fork. The tines were twisted together unnaturally, and the result has been disastrous for them all. Looking along with cultural anthropologists at human history, there are many instances within the caste system of tribes who share cultural similarity, benefiting from the sharing of resources without fully blending the tribes. Arranged marriages aimed at sharing such things as access to water, hunting grounds, and even the politics of blurring tribal boundaries for the welfare of neighboring tribes were commonplace. We can also see and cite examples of whole tribes being swallowed up culturally in tribal wars aimed at consuming, not sharing, tribal lands and resources. Such brutal and bloody struggles wiped out entire cultures, leaving little behind by which to identify their existence, much less their customs. This brand of cultural destruction is happening in the 21st century right before our eyes. Three separate but similar subcultures are opting to dismiss their own respective customs, seemingly in favor of a merge which, in the accomplishing of the task, destroys the individual value of each. The three subcultures involved are those of leather, BDSM, and fetish. Discovering and declaring the value of each of these cultures separately, one has to look into the history and historic evolution of each. If an evolutionary mistake is being made, the means by which it is being made and the inherent damage this mistake can and will cause has to be examined. Looking at these things can be somewhat painful, but it is time to take off the rose-colored glasses nonetheless.
For Jimmy, we'll say pink glasses.
Right.
So. Either way, pink, rose, it all fits in the same category with him. Mm.
Defining culture, drawing the boundaries. Webster's New World Dictionary defines culture in this context thus. Culture, the skills, art, etc. of a given people in a given time, in a given period, civilization. The implication of this definition is plain. A culture is defined by its members. It finds definition in its own birth and evolution. Included in the definition of a culture are the customs, rituals, art, skills, and political history of its people. While a culture may neighbor another in similarity, each culture is individual and sovereign to the members thereof. Failing in the defense of such sovereignty, a culture relegates itself to obscurity, if not extinction. Leather as a culture. Leather as a culture evolved from two obvious sources, those being the gay male motorcycle culture established by military men returning from the war, and the culture of ancient Roman aristocracy. The selective blending of the customs of military hierarchy and that of the socially elite of Roman society resulted in a culture of master owners and their slaves, guided by an immutable rank and file. The seemingly roguish and secretive nature of the culture of leather was largely the result of mainstream culture's abhorrence of anything homosexual, combined with the scandalously dangerous visage. The uniforms in leather blended the leather gear of the motorcycle soldier and that of the gladiator slaves of ancient Rome. The collar, consisting of a chain with a locking device, was an innovation which took the place of the iron collar worn by Roman slaves, presumably to make it less obtrusive so that it could be worn under clothing, invisible to the mundane or mainstream culture.
No, I think it was just that the big flat iron circles around the necks,
heavy.
Really, yeah, heavy, and they cut into your chin. You know, they killed the chin line.
The slave's harness, generally in brown leather, was, again, a modern replica of that worn by the gladiator slaves of ancient Rome. Leather as a culture passed its history down from generation to generation orally, none of the inherent culturally valuable customs and rituals being written down. It was presumed that such would always be the case, and that leather masters were yoked with the responsibility to teach these things by the very presentation of their first cover. In effect,
The cover means their master's cap, for people who don't know what the word cover means.
I'll read the footnote on this.
Okay.
Cover is the military term used for an officer's hat. In this usage, the cover would be constructed of leather.
That is where the master's cap comes from.
Actually, if I may, cover is any military hat.
Yeah, but
right.
that's where the
word comes from.
The leather culture took that word from the military because it was based on...
It's not
on
just the officer's hat, though, because
no.
Enlisted also
it's all called it. Yeah, it's all called a cover.
Right.
Yeah.
In effect, being presented a cover was equivalent to being promoted to a leadership rank and position, and the troops don't train themselves. A master was made so by the presentation of his first cover, which only occurred after he had proven his mastery of the knowledge of the aspects of the culture. His knowledge of the willingness to adhere to the somewhat rigid structure of leather culture, and his ability to articulate and therefore mentor them. Being a sexual top was not even remotely enough to earn a man a master's cover. The two are only related in relation to the individual and had nothing to do inherently with one another. What a master and his slave did in their sexual expressions of their commitment was of no consequence or concern to anyone outside of that commitment. Public displays were entertaining and stimulating, but were of no effect where social standing was concerned, and were certainly not required. In its inception and early evolution, the culture of leather, as is to be defined for the sake of this dissertation, was limited strictly to homosexual men.
Now, I want to stop there for a second.
Oh, there's more I said.
Oh, I know, but what I want to point out is that, as it's stated there, just because you are considered a master, being a top in a sexual situation has nothing to do with being a master.
No.
I know several masters who, when it comes to sex, bottom in most areas.
Sexually speaking.
Sex is top and bottom. The lifestyle we're talking about is dominant, submissive, master, slave. They are two very different things. One is sex, one is not. So we just need to be clear about that, that just because you're a top and you can boss anything you need to, or because you're really good with flogger, does not make you a master.
No.
It just means that you top. It does not mean you are a master. So I just want to make that clear, that point clear there.
Right.
Because that point actually gets incredibly blurred in the BDSM community.
Yeah, well, I believe we talk about that a little bit later on.
So,
okay, BDSM as a culture. The anagram BDSM describes bondage, discipline, sadism, and masochism. This anagram has been, for the sake of expedience, broken down into three separate, shorter anagrams. BD for bondage and discipline, DS for dominance and submission, and SM for sadomasochism. Each of the three and the anagram of all four letters represent wholly alternative physical activities generally aimed at sexual stimulation. Resultant, the culture of BDSM is one almost entirely of alternative sexually stimulating activity and the practice thereof. Because the culture of BDSM is one based solely on the practice of sexually stimulating alternatives, those alternatives became the means of establishing and evolving its hierarchy. One rises through the ranks to higher status by demonstrating mastery of particular sexually stimulating activities. This being the case, raising one's status within the culture of BDSM requires demonstrating for the entertainment, stimulation, and scrutiny of other members of the culture proficiency in one or another alternative activity. This scrutiny and the resultant required collective judgment of skill provide the structure of BDSM as a culture. BDSM as a culture can claim something of a written history in the writings of such as the Marquis de Sade, not exactly popular amongst BDSMers, by the way.
Well, no, but we got into an argument one time over that with a caller. We'll talk about that in a sec.
Aeneas Nin, and in such works as The Story of O. These works describe masters as being undeniably proficient in sexually stimulating physical alternatives, dominants, or doms, of lesser rank to be acceptably experienced BDSM tops, and submissives, or subs, to be BDSM bottoms, or the least or lesser of the rank and file, the initiates. While seemingly inclusive where sexual orientation is concerned, BDSM is largely, if not predominantly, heterosexual. While bisexual demonstration is considered acceptable, homosexual men and by and large homosexual women are subtly consigned to either play within heterosexual or bisexual guidelines or remain on the fringe of BDSM as a culture.
I think that's more so for gay men than it is for gay women, though.
Right. Well, that's because we are still in a heterosexual male-dominated society.
Yeah.
Two women together is like two for the price of one.
Well, it's like I don't know any straight porn movie that doesn't have at least one lesbian scene in it. So,
okay, now, fetishism as a culture. Inasmuch as a fetish is defined as sexual stimulation by objects or materials not otherwise sexual in nature, the range of objects and materials coupled with the number of people likely to be sexually stimulated by any one object or material make it difficult to define fetishism as a culture. Each object or material which becomes a fetish for certain individuals may draw such individuals as have similar fetish interests together in order to share the fetish, yet the practice of fetishism itself does not seem to draw a larger collective interest, leaving fetishism without a collective culture per se. Okay.
Unless you're into splashing, because then they have their own magazine for that.
Mutable materials, such as leather or rubber, as well as many others, can be molded, mended, or altered in order to create objects of a sexual nature, and as a result, these materials and their related worshippers are increased in number. In gathering together to share innovations, these focused fetishists form collectives. Still, the focused involved prevents the practice of fetishism in and of itself from becoming a collective culture. Finding refuge within the established cultures of leather or BDSM, but only within the guidelines of each established culture, each collective of fetishists relies on adherence to those guidelines in establishing a subculture rather than a separate collective culture. Considered by established cultures to be oddities, sometimes happily, oft merely tolerated, fetishism remains on the fringe without a collective, separate identity. Participation in such things as bondage, discipline, sadism, or masochism may be practiced by fetishists in addition to or in conjunction with their particular fetish, but are often without relation or regard to the fetish itself. Relationships may form between fetishists based on the sharing of the fetish and may or may not be dominant and submissive by definition. Fetishists individually may be drawn to militaristic social structure without the same having anything to do with their particular fetish. Fetishists may be male, female, or hermaphrodite, homosexual, bisexual, or heterosexual. With the amorphous nature of fetishism, it is no wonder that fetishists brave enough to seek out social expression of their nature are swallowed up by established subcultures only to be relegated to accepting honorary or symbolic participation.
So, those are the three basic subcultures or communities, cultures that define the area that we're talking about tonight and the different rules that everybody plays by.
One of the reasons that I object to the use of the word communities, separating them, is because, and this particular piece that I wrote that I'm reading for you now goes directly to that, as we all fit into one community, but as separate cultures. And I'm promoting the recognition of those three separate cultures as separate individuals, separate entities, but we all have to share space, and we get to that. I promise.
Well, I don't know. I would actually say, as structured as the leather culture is, and as tight-knit as it is, I would consider that I still say is. There's a lot of fringe players, and there are a lot of BDSMers that are in the presence of, but I think we all kind of know the differences, so...
Unfortunately...
I prefer to think of the leather society or the leather culture as a community, because the leather people do really bond together and do a lot of things for the greater community.
And yet, this is where we're about to go. The boundaries between these similar cultures are being so blurred that each of the cultures is losing its own identity.
Yeah, and... Well, the one thing I do see a lot of, I don't see a lot of, say, best example I give, fundraising. I don't see a lot of fundraising going on to help the community at large from BDSMers or from fetishists. But I see the leather community doing a lot of things, holding a lot of fundraisers to raise money for, you know, AIDS research or to help homeless or to help elderly gay people take care of their dogs or whatever. Where I don't see that kind of commitment to help the greater public from the BDSM and fetish community. And maybe it's going on, but I don't see it.
I do. I've seen Lone Star Rubber Corps do...
But
they are a fetish collective.
They are a fetish collective. They are one of the few that I know of that actually get out there and do
and
something.
And if any of you in the Lone Star Rubber Corps are listening,
we love
God, you. I love you guys.
Yeah, you guys are great. But with that, and then you have like a Sinfest.
Yes,
they're predominantly BDSMers, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of fetishists that are in that are attached with Sinfest. And
how much
Sinfest
of the money raised is donated to community?
Well, with Sinfest, all of it is
good.
So that's one of the few exceptions that I can think of. But with all the different BDSM groups and swingers clubs or whatever you want to call it, I really don't see them.
You are so much better at setting me up to give the information than I am you.
Yeah, I know. But I don't see them organizing in the way I see the leather community organized to help the greater public is all I'm trying to say.
Okay, well, let's get to
this.
And
I would like to see more of it.
Let's get to this. We've got a lot of material to go over.
So let's get into
let's get through
the blurring of the boundaries.
Okay.
Let's talk about how these different organizations are losing themselves in each other. And
I called this blurring the boundaries, the thinning of the skin. The age of political correctness.
Boo.
Just as no good deed goes unpunished, so no good idea goes unspoiled. Political correctness was a good idea aimed at helping all to learn to speak and behave in such a way as to minimize undue or unintentional offense. The spoiling of that idea was disguised in its intent and reared its ugly head, getting out of hand before anyone knew what had happened. Rather than focusing on offense and why we are offended by a thing, we established an oversensitivity to potentially offensive language and practices.
Which is why so many comedians are so popular now, because they actually trash political.
I added this next little quote. It's a quote from a children's poem, and I added it in because I thought it was so fitting. Quarrels never could last long if on one side only lay the wrong. Rather than focusing on the taking of offense, we are asked, as a society, to alter the language we speak, even inventing new and presumably less offensive words to replace words in use for centuries. This was done because people had become sensitive to these words and claimed offense. What changed was the language, not the attitude. Victim mindset found refuge and a soapbox in political correctness. Suddenly, victims of politically incorrect speech were everywhere, and their numbers only grew. Groups of people which were, by their nature, limited to one or the other gender group or ethnic group fell under attack from those who felt they were being cheated in not being allowed to participate. Never mind the fact that these people would not feel comfortable in these groups because of the very nature of their existence, they felt victimized for not being permitted to join in the fun. The battle cry of the victim became discrimination, and lawsuits were filed by the thousands.
Are still.
Among the most vocal and tenacious of these victims' groups were women. In fact, the spelling of that word was at one time under suspicion because it contained the word men, a fact that feminists found offensive. A new spelling was proposed. We were told that when referring to women in print, we were to spell the word W-I-M-M-I-N. The word woman, W-O-M-A-N, was to become W-O-M-Y-N. Side note, MS Word Spellcheck did not recognize either corrected spelling. Not that the offensive pronunciation differed, but feminists chose to take their offense at the spelling of the word, as it did not permit them a separate identity.
What I think is funny, women, W-I-M-M-I-N. Yeah. That's like add an S and you've got a swimming pool. Let's go swimmin'.
Traditionally, all male groups were all but forced to include women, whether it was appropriate to the group's purpose for existing or not. For many of such groups, this forced inclusion became the means by which they disbanded and faded into obscurity. Businesses which thrived on all-male clientele either changed their focus or were sued or threatened out of existence. Political correctness became a weapon against which there was no defense but capitulation.
Now, this is one thing I want to say real quick. I want to know why a man has not sued Curves, the gyms for women only. They exclude men. To me, that's discrimination. I don't know why a man has not sued Curves.
We don't have to have penis envy. We have them.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. You know, let's talk about discrimination. Nobody says a word about them opening up a gym that's women only. But if Bally said this is for men only, women would throw a fit.
It is because feminists
Well, then I'm a menace. I'm not a feminist. I'm a menace.
I agree to a point. Women have been subjugated in our culture for centuries. We live in a heterosexual, male-dominated society, and women are considered second class. I understand that.
Yeah, I get that. But what I want to say is practice what you preach.
Well,
You know, you open up a women's only gym, men aren't allowed. I want a man to sue them and say, I want to go to this gym.
It was done. Jenny Craig used to have a series of gyms across the country, and they closed their gyms, and now they're just the online or products, because a man sued Jenny Craig for membership in one of their gyms.
Yeah.
And won. And they didn't want him there, so they closed the gym.
But you've got all these other women-specific gyms that are popping up that men aren't allowed. I mean, there's one right around the corner from my house. And it's like, I really want to go in there and say, you know, I want a membership. And they say no. Say, you'll hear from my lawyer, you know. That's discrimination. But if, like I said, on the flip side, if we told a woman, no, this is a men's only place, there'd be a lawsuit in 2 seconds.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who's offending women in this.
Yeah, well, I just think you ought to practice what you preach. Fair play is fair play. You can't say that we can't go there, but you're allowed to go wherever you want. If you can go wherever you want, we need to be able to go wherever we want to.
And so that we can move past this, let's move on.
So, yeah, let's move on. Let's go on. I'm done ranting.
A move that was meant to improve inclusion, fair employment and promotion practices, and interpersonal working relationships in the workplace became the instrument with which society was to be collectively castrated.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't end with the mainstream. Even long-standing subcultures which had existed for decades were affected, some to the exclusion of their very purpose for existence. Those who survived did so only by going deeper underground, making them less accessible to others who may be in need of their focus. What we have done in attempting to make all things accessible to all people is to rob everyone of anything remotely individual. What we are asking in making this attempt at social androgyny is for people to be one and all the same person. We cannot allow ourselves under this new politically correct system to prefer the company and fellowship of a particular gender, ethnicity, or sexual orientation. Regardless of what drives the need, it is discrimination.
Unless you're in California, because they all look the same there.
In an attempt at homogenizing society, we have created a new culture of isolationism. The message is now, never mind what you desire, feel, or believe. If you can't be inclusive, stay home. The world has become an unfriendly and lonely place for those who seek others who think and feel as they do. If we can't think, desire, and feel inclusively, we are to hide our thoughts, desires, and feelings away as if they are a detriment to this new society simply in existing within us. If we can't hide them away, we should not participate at all. In the once-hidden gay subculture, political correctness declared war on the id of gay men and lesbians. These two groups, by their very nature, cannot and should not be homogenized. The more vulnerable in each of these two are damaged and isolated by a forced inclusion of elements which are completely alien to their nature. Likewise, attempting to force inclusion of heterosexuals into a gathering of gay men or lesbians is akin to sitting atop a keg of gunpowder smoking a cigar. One false move, one remark taken badly, one accidental or inappropriate touch, and boom. In the newly heightened awareness of offense and therefore sensitivity to it that has been created in the wake of political correctness movement, such blendings become recipes for disaster. Social, personal, cultural, and psychological disaster. Some things aren't meant to be mixed. Oil and water, for example. Think about what havoc would be created if these two elements were personified and given voice in the age of political correctness. Three paths have come together in an unnatural reverse fork, forced by an idea which is fueled by rampant egoism. Sure, the narrow path through the Garden of Roses and Bougainvillea is pretty in its appearance. Take off the rose-colored glasses for a moment and have a look at the thorns. In this instance, those pretty flowers are fatally poisonous, and the bees who feed on them are ravenous. Now let's assess the damage. Let's talk about the crippling of cultures. Hobbling leather as a culture. As was described in the opening section, the culture of leather was, from its inception, strictly gay male. In the age of political correctness, the demands of heterosexual or bisexual women for inclusion have destroyed this testosterone-based gathering of men whose focus was on other men and the traditions that evolved from the very formation of a culture surrounding leather. Its exclusive nature was a natural cultural fact, evolving in the skills, art, etc. of a given people in a given period, civilization. In establishing a civilization or culture, gay men who embraced rigid militaristic structure and the ancient Roman master-owner-slave property roles in their romantic and erotic relationships with other men, it followed quite naturally that women were excluded. Cover the ointment and you won't have flies. As leather culture was, by its nature, exclusive, so were the rites, rituals, protocols, and behavioral expectations kept hidden from any who were outside of it. Initially, in the wave of political correctness, few women attempted to breach the outer boundaries of the leather culture, as it appeared too dangerous. Face it, men in leather looked dangerous, if not ominous, part and parcel of its purpose. The places where leather men gathered protected the culture naturally as part of their responsibility to it. These were the places where leather men gathered, and no one who did not fit the criteria was allowed entry. Leather, as a culture, thrived and was safe from feminist attack. Eventually, armed with the experimentally tried weapon of political correctness, women who belonged to BDSM culture began to demand inclusion in these sacred halls, loudly proclaiming that they were being discriminated against and threatening lawsuits. As the mainstream law of the land had declared that no one could be discriminated against in places of public accommodation on the basis of race, creed, religion, gender, or political ideology, many of the sacred halls that were the town halls of leather culture closed. Those which did not close were forced to accommodate an element that was foreign to the very purpose for their existence, changing them forever. Gone were the days of leathermen gathering to be with other leathermen. Now had come the age of accommodating women who had little, if any, idea what they were doing there, but congratulated themselves that they were no longer being excluded because they were women. Dress codes that once protected leather culture from the tittering, giggling, finger-pointing vanilla tourists were relaxed. Leather, as a culture, was dying. The plague of the 20th century, AIDS, swept down upon the leather culture and took away with it many of the mentors who were to pass the cultural paradigm to the next generation. All but a few were taken, taking their knowledge of leather cultural tradition with them. The few who were left behind had a monumental task, and many lost the will to do so in the battle over the simplest of cultural needs, territory. Women from the BDSM culture who had forced their way into the ranks of leather men began to demand, in addition to being allowed to share territory, the right to dictate cultural paradigm, forcing the paradigm of the BDSM culture into leather culture. It was not long before gay leather men were being told that they could not, if they could not be pansexual, a word that did not come into common use until the mid to late 70s, they could not elevate their social standing within the culture. Suddenly, gay leather men were being told, flatly, that if they did not practice BDSM publicly for the stimulation of all, so as to be judged on their proficiency, they could not be publicly considered more than novices. They brought their men. Heterosexual men and those who claimed marginal bisexuality began to become regular fixtures in leather territory, few of whom would actually don leather out of respect in doing so. Terminology changed as these BDSM persons began to desire a piece of the danger pie, but found the extremes of leather culture beyond their ken. Master became daddy for those who wanted leather light, and slave became boy. In original leather culture, a master would address his slave as boy in getting his attention, and this term felt far more warm and fuzzy than slave. In accommodating the BDSM women, even the word boy had to be updated to affect inclusion. A female boy became a B-O-I boy. Here we go again. Same pronunciation, but let's not offend the gods by spelling it the same way.
And I want to say something right there. I am so sick of these twinks and 20-somethings and circuit boys on all of their little online profiles or their handle or their email address. They use B-O-I. Honey, if you really are that much of a girl, but you still have something swinging between your legs, tuck and tape and put on a dress, because you're right. Not a B-O-I. B-O-I is a feminine moniker. Stop using it.
Right. It came to pass that if one claimed to be leather, the implication was that he was politically correct BDSM with a fetish for leather clothing and toys, and that he was ready, willing, and able to engage in heterosexual BDSM, both privately and publicly, on demand. These are a few but the ways that leather culture has suffered. The entire list is epic. An entire culture is all but dead. Those who remain largely secretive and hidden. Many have abandoned their leather lives entirely. There are but a few voices still teaching their traditions of a lost culture, and their legs are bound at the knees. Now okay. Let's go on. You want to
actually? What
I want to pause here?
Yeah, I want to pause here because it's almost time for a station ID in a few minutes. But let's cover that, and then we'll do our station ID and come back with after a couple of songs. And then
we're almost finished.
What? Wait, yeah, no.
With the first one.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is maybe what we should do is just touch on the other stuff and let them download it and read it all themselves.
I'll read
and
quickly.
Let's get on to some of this other stuff because we don't have a lot of time.
We've gone 4 pages. We've only got 2 left on this one, and the others are single page, and I can skim those.
Yeah, but these two, I think, are especially the forms of address is probably going to be the most important.
This gives the reason for these, so we'll...
Yeah.
We'll do that.
We'll touch on it. So
we need to do station identification now?
Yeah, in a couple of minutes.
We've got a couple minutes to go.
But one thing I do want to stress again, please, if you're a man, if you have a wang, stop using the B-O-I.
B-O-I is used by club kids.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and if I see somebody who claims to be leather and they're male and they use B-O-I, I know that they're just a player.
I laugh.
Yeah, they're circuit boys, they're party girls, whatever you want to call yourselves, but they're playing a game and they don't really understand or know leather. They just picked the spelling because they thought it was cute.
I really miss George Carlin, but there's no shortage of stuff to laugh at out here.
Yeah, this is true, very true. Yeah. But Basically, I agree with a lot of that, and the one thing that I agree that, and I wish leather people would have had the stamina to stand up and say, bite me, when BDSMers started demanding that we had to prove our skills or we weren't really doms or masters or whatever.
Just to qualify
you
something
know what?
Here.
Who I have sex with and how I have sex with them is none of your business, and it's not for public display. If I happen to be in the mood to beat somebody or stick needles in them or set them on fire or electrocute them, then I will.
Let's qualify something here before we end up really ticking off even our friends.
You.
We.
Not me. You said it.
We have no problem whatsoever. And what I'm trying to say with this is that there are three different cultures, and each are very important. They need to exist for the focus that they provide. We just don't think that they need to be homogenized.
Yeah, we don't.
They need to exist separately.
We don't need to stick them in a blender. We need to respect the differences and enjoy the differences and celebrate the differences.
I love my BDSM.
But now
friends.
I have actually had a BDSMer who I did not know. I was at a leather event, a leather conference, and came up to me and said, "Well, I don't know why you consider yourself a dom or a master. I've never seen you play."
Exactly. I've had the same thing.
And you know what? You don't need to see me play, because if you have to see me play in order to actually respect me, then you don't respect
the
me.
Accidental comedians in our midst.
Yeah.
I was in full high leather at the Ripcord, and this woman that I had never seen before walked right up to me and said, "I don't believe you're a master, and nor does anybody here. Nobody here believes you're leather." And I said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Why is that?" She says, "Because nobody here has ever seen you play."
Yeah, I've had people tell me that too. And
the
like,
accidental comedians in
and
our
my,
midst.
My personal favorite is, "I'm sorry you weren't there when I was playing, but that's your problem.
I'm sorry that because I didn't invite you. You're a woman."
Yeah, but I have played in public, and I have played at several events, and, you know, if you weren't there, that's not my problem.
Yeah. All right, guys, we're going to step out for our PSAs. We'll be back in a few minutes.
It's time for KPFT's local station board elections, and you could be a candidate for either a staff or listener position. The candidate deadline has been extended to July 19th, so there's plenty of time to get in the action. Board delegates are essential to the Pacifica Network as they provide the dialogue between the community and the station that ensures that the community's needs are being met. KPFT wants your expertise and your voice to help decide upon important matters in our local station board. To collect your candidate packet, either download it from PacificaElections2010.org or pick up a physical copy at the KPFT offices at 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, 77006. For more information, contact Kathy Kidd, the local election supervisor, at 281-668-8854. This is 90.1 FM, Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston, Texas.
Promise in Southeast Harris County is holding a fundraiser at both Casa Olays and Pasadena on Friday, July 16th from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Contact Hank at Family Promise at 281-991-1084 to get your flyer for the fundraiser. A portion of your bill will go to Family Promise's work with homeless families. Get your flyer and come hungry. KPFT Houston.
And you're listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. See, no cilantro, I can get through it all.
I see that.
Yeah, we see that now.
And don't forget, you can join us on Facebook, facebook.com/afterhours. Be a friend of the show. See pictures of the gang from the Pride Parade.
And anything else that we've done.
Yeah, a picture of Amy with her legs spread wide open like that.
Woo!
Yeah, she's here somewhere. She's
out on the patio.
Oh, that means she didn't hear it.
Probably not.
So, just join us there on Facebook and all the other fun stuff. You can also join KPFT. A little bit more music. I guess we're on an Andy Bell streak.
Yep.
Ding Dong. And we'll be back then with Levitize.
And we're back to After Hours Leather Ties. Tonight we're talking about the history of the three different cultures within the leather community, which is leather, BDSM, and fetish. And we stopped off, and now with the explanation of what the three are, let's get to the damages that are occurring with the blending of the three.
Yeah, we passed through leather culture and the damage there. Now we're going to go into BDSM as a culture. Pass the Ritalin, please. Just as the leather culture has suffered from the forced homogenization of cultures, so too has the culture of BDSM suffered. Ricocheting back and forth between BDSM and leather cultures, the bold pioneers of homogenization bring back to BDSM much of what they learn in leather culture. In doing so, the very nature of BDSM as a culture alters. In the origins and earlier evolution of BDSM as a culture, few of its members actually incorporated dominance and submission into their everyday lives, but rather used them as tools in sex and sexuality. A great deal of BDSM practice involves persons outside of established relationships. As was the case for the Marquis de Sade, for all intents and purposes, the members of the BDSM culture live fairly mainstream lives, and it would not be supposed publicly that they might be engaged in such practices. Outside of the privacy of the boudoir or organized play party, BDSM practitioners might just as well be the people next door. The neighbors might whisper, but that's what neighbors do. Members of BDSM as a culture meet secretly, and initiates are required to come amongst them, being recommended and sponsored by other established and trusted members. Much of the secrecy involved was directly tied to mainstream law of the land, in that many of the laws of the age made and still, in many instances, do the practice of such things criminal. New members had to be screened so as to prevent criminal charges from resulting from bruises, welts, etc. The status of individuals in BDSM culture relies solely on their ability to demonstrate proficiency in sexually stimulating alternative physical activity. This, for the most part, remains true to this day. What does not coincide with this, and what blurs the boundaries of BDSM as a culture, is the implication of change with the introduction of the wearing of the uniforms previously donned only by gay leather men. Many BDSM people are not only disinterested in the wearing of leather, but are offended by it. It implies something not inherent to them or to their understanding of the culture of BDSM. In short, it creates cultural confusion, even if it has no effect on the social hierarchy they have come to embrace. Once predominantly heterosexual, the political correct inclusiveness called pansexualism forced the inclusion of gay men and lesbians. While these individuals had to be included for the sake of reciprocity in the application of political correctness, the same are a distraction to the whole. Men are supposed to be fascinated by the sexual stimulation of women, even if they occasionally include men. Women are supposed to be sexually stimulated by men, and it is acceptable that, in the absence of men, they are willing to sexually stimulate each other. In an archaic mindset, but a pervasive one nonetheless. Prior to the now ongoing homogenization of cultures, in the BDSM culture, female dominants were addressed as ma'am, mistress, or lady. In the attempt at forcing the blend of these two cultures, those who plant feet in both bring back to BDSM a new term for female dominance. Many BDSM women now wear leather uniforms, once exclusive to leather men, and demand to be addressed as sir, daddy, or master. Publicly denying one's own gender by insisting upon being addressed by the titles and or pronouns belonging to the opposite gender creates yet more cultural confusion. These changes diminish membership and discourage new members by failing to establish and maintain a collective identity. It's mutiny. Abandon ship. BDSM as a culture has developed a split personality. In attempting to incorporate aspects of leather culture, BDSM culture members who vacillate between the two inadvertently find themselves either merely tolerated or wholly rebuffed by both. Those who are not interested in the blend find the attempt to be an insufferable distraction. The persons involved in attempting to blend these cultures are not actively pursuing the blend, but are hyperactive in both cultures to that end. Those who are not tend to suffer in varying degrees from a deficit in focus, attention. Pass the Ritalin, please. Fetishism as a culture. Not all those who wander are lost. The damage that the new age of political correctness and inclusion has caused within the cultures of leather and BDSM are of little consequence to the amorphous culture of fetishism. The damage that has been done, or can be a potential threat, can only be so to those fetish collectives whose dubious footing is rooted within either of the other two cultures. Becoming collateral damage in the ongoing struggle, fetish collectives may, as a result, have to distance themselves from the fight in order to maintain any sense of established collective identity. In so doing, fetish collectives and their establishment of a collective identity become and culture become somewhat nomadic while not necessarily losing focus. Belonging to neither of the two cultures, fetish collectives simply find refuge and acceptance within them, as well as venues for public expression of their collective passions. These are not likely to fade in the struggle, though it may be more difficult on fetish collectives in the long run than can be imagined now. In establishing a collective identity and culture, fetish collectives may well find themselves under the same sort of attack. In conclusion, it seems in this struggle that individuality and collective identity are the targets of an insidious new tradition, isolationism via forced collectivism. In a fact, be it fortunate or not, is that if the members of each of these cultures cannot, through open and brutally honest communication, find and share respect for their own cultural paradigms, as well as those of each of the others, the only alternative to homogenization may well be a return to separatism. Can we discover a way to blur the cultural boundaries enough to peacefully share territory and similarity without abandoning those things which make us necessarily different? If we can begin from a respectful study and honoring of the differences and proceed by acknowledging that though somewhat similar, we rightfully approach our own cultural paradigms from perspectives uniquely related thereto, it is not only possible, but preferable to either homogenization or segregation.
Well, I'm seeing more of the segregation going on lately.
Yeah, and it's sad.
To me, segregation of the different communities is, I see it's happening more and more now, and actually I think it's a good thing. I think everybody needs to get back to their roots.
It shouldn't be necessary though, because we do share similarities, and unfortunately there's only so much space out there. And I'm not going to say that BDSMers need to go out and buy and run their own bars for the practice of, for the public expression. We just need to know in the spaces that we share how to draw the line and how to respect one another and our differences rather than trying to force one to be the other.
Well, I agree that the fetishists are the ones who are kind of caught in the middle.
Yeah,
they have nowhere to go. Because what alternative do they have? It's not like you can walk into JR's in a furry costume. Because
right.
I know they call themselves furries. The animal side, they have an animal guide or whatever it is. During Spring Iniquity last year, they had the one boy, he was raccoon, I believe.
Yeah.
He's dressed in a raccoon suit, and he's a furry. And
he's cute.
Being a furry is actually, it's a really huge movement, and it's, I don't know, I consider it a fetish, but I think, if anything, the furries are the ones who are going to actually create a more grounded fetish community or culture, simply because they have nowhere else to go. They are finding their own venues.
Either that or rubber. Rubber is getting so huge that there are now conferences.
Oh, yes.
And major national events.
Oh, yeah. Well, they have Mr. International Rubber that, you know.
Exactly.
But to me, rubber kind of falls into more of the BDSM aspect of it, because so many people that are into rubber are they're into the BDSM aspect of it.
Just as with leather, there are people who are into rubber who don't practice BDSM, and
yeah,
they don't practice dominance and submission or military hierarchy. The whole fetish for them is the rubber, the material, and what they can do with it. We're crossing boundaries here and trying to force other people to be exactly like ourselves. It's like when we have the BDSMers who come into leather culture, the leather bars, expect everyone else to be just as they are, and the leather people, on the other hand, want them to conform to leather culture.
Well, the way I look at it, if you are going into a leather bar, you need to respect the culture and tradition of the place. You would not...
Yeah, like that's going to happen.
I'm sorry, you would not get in full drag and go to a country bar out in Hickville, USA.
No.
you've got to respect the culture that you are walking into.
When in Rome.
Exactly. But the problem I'm seeing is that there are several BDSMers that when they go out to the leather bar to try to enjoy themselves and have a good time, they have problems because when in Rome, they are acting like Italians.
Well, they're acting like American tourists in Europe.
Yes. And again, I think it all just comes down to education. If we can all just get back to understanding the differences, educate. I understand the BDSM protocols because I made a point to learn them.
Exactly. Me too.
And when I know I am in that environment, I use those protocols.
I love my BDSM
because I don't want to.
I really do.
I don't want to offend them by forcing a leather protocol on them, which I know is not something that they normally practice.
And I
want
to see.
But by the same token, I want them to learn leather protocols, so when they come to a leather event, they understand the protocol and use those so as not to offend us. I want to see them make the effort.
I want to see
and more
all
more
three
are,
of these
like
cultures
it.
Respecting the boundaries, the things that are different, and not try. I want to see a stop to this forced homogenization, the watering down of each of these cultures, because each of these cultures is important in and of itself. It create a focus, and people are out there looking for that focus. And if you homogenize these cultures, that focus isn't going to be there.
It's gone.
And we're going to lose these people.
Well, a good example, I've gone to leather events, and I know what to expect. I am leather.
Yes. As do
I have also been to different BDSM play parties and BDSM events where, example, at the Lion's Den or some places like this, I know what to expect when I go there. I know that if I walk in there in full leather with all of my gear and all of my toys, mm-hmm. I'm probably going to scare quite a few people because they're not leather per se.
I do it anyway.
I will go in, and it is known that I am leather, yep. And they know who I am, and I will wear some leather, but I'm not going to go in there and to that event and start...
I'm not going to demand that they behave like leather people.
No. It's a BDSM fetish event. I'm going to respect their space.
Exactly.
But I also know that a lot of BDSMers, which is something you touched on in your essay there, that they're not necessarily into leather. It's a turn-off for them. I know a lot of BDSMers, they're into lace. They're into latex. They're into costuming.
Satin.
They're into costuming other than leather. And yes, leather is a costume.
I saw a woman in the coolest red satin with black lace, whalebone type corset.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, oh, man, that thing looked hot on her.
But
there wasn't
like,
there wasn't a stitch of leather on that woman, and she was hot.
I mean, one of my favorite subbies, Pixie.
Yeah, we love you.
Pixie, she looks good in anything, and she looks good in absolutely nothing.
That's true.
I mean, I'm a gay man, but Pixie, she's a gorgeous girl. And
I love the ink.
Yeah, she's got beautiful tat work. But Pixie, she doesn't like to wear leather that much. She's very into being very girly, and when she does wear leather, it's leather mini skirts. She's wearing something very feminine and sexy.
Yeah.
But it's rare when I see her in full hardcore leather gear, because she's not leather, she's BDSM, and she is perfect the way she is.
And it's people like Pixie who need BDSM as a culture to remain BDSM as a culture.
Right.
People like this don't suffer the homogenization well, and they get disillusioned with the culture. Come on, people, you need to keep your collective identity and defend it. Your culture is sovereign to all of your members, and trying to force this homogenization is only watering down what people are looking for. They're looking for that focus, and if you're not going to maintain that focus, you're going to lose them.
Or if you keep changing the rule, right. You keep changing the rules on them. I mean, it's like playing Monopoly, and then when you get all your hotels, somebody says, oh, no, you can't have those hotels, you got to give them back. It's like,
right.
Uh-uh. You know, this is not AIG. I'm not giving them back. But
okay.
What I do like that I am seeing lately is I do see a lot of the BDSM community, a lot of the leather community, actually sitting down and talking and realizing that we need to stay separate in order to stay strong, but we need to keep together and stay in constant communication, and that's what I'm lacking. I'm seeing that there. It's not whereas we had the forced homogenization, and
it's still going on.
Well, that is actually slowing down, and I'm seeing that it's not some, I won't say forced, but it's
assumed. And that's frustrating.
But I'm also seeing that they are actually voluntarily segregating themselves a little bit and saying, no, we need to keep our culture. Y'all need to keep your culture. So let's stop trying to force it together.
Yeah. All it's going to do is create strife
between
us. To me,
that's a really good thing. I'm glad to see the BDSMers standing up and saying, this is how we... These are our protocols. We understand yours. We respect yours. And everybody's finally starting to learn that this homogenization is really destructive to everybody.
Something that's happening for me is that smaller home-based type of BDSM groups are actually inviting me in to talk to them about leather culture because, and the way they put it to me is, you're here because we want to learn.
Yeah.
And not because this is what we want to do, but because we want to learn so that we can respect it and honor it. And I'm like, wow,
but
where did you people come from?
But then again, out of 10 or 15 people that may be sitting there, one or two of them are very interested and they have nowhere else to go. So it's a good thing that you go speak with them because now they can say, yes, this is what I, or no, this isn't what I thought it was. So.
Well, that happens.
It's a good way to compare notes when you go and you speak in front of a group of
those people after the presentation.
You go and you speak to a group of BDSMers about leather protocol and the history of all the different subcultures, and they can sit there and say, okay, I agree with that, I don't agree with that, I understand this, I understand that, or this is where I belong, but at least I understand where you're coming from now.
Yeah, and that's what we need to do. We need to study each other's cultures so that we are able to respect them.
And celebrate the differences. Celebrate the difference, baby.
Okay, moving on, we're going to talk now. These two are pretty much specific to leather culture, but good for everybody to know.
Yes, especially the BDSMers who go to the leather bar. This is a real quick rundown of how not to get yourself in trouble when you're in somebody else's space. It's like, when in Rome, we're going to show you what it's like to be. We're going to tell you about what it's like to be like in Rome here. So
first, let's talk about forms of address. In a day gone by, it was easy to know how to address someone in the leather tribe by the way they were dressed. There was always some signal that said master or slave. In those forgotten times, only slaves wore harnesses as they were considered a mark of bondage, of the body being captive and bound to service. Slaves were not permitted to wear black leather, but were relegated to wear leather dyed brown. If a slave wore a cap, it was fashioned like a baseball cap or Civil War cap, in brown leather. If a slave carried whips, paddles, crops, or other toys, they were carried in the hands, not clipped to the clothing. It would have been a matter of bearing these things for his master, not as a matter of possession and the invitation to make use of them in some way. Slaves didn't own toys. It wasn't permitted. Any other trappings, such as armbands, would have been worn on the right side, denoting submission. Masters wore black leather and dressed all other accessories and accoutrements on their left side, denoting dominance. A master's cover generally resembled a military officer's cap.
And quickly, the whole concept of left being dominant, right being passive, that is kind of why the hanky code evolved as it did, left being a top and right being a bottom. So that's where that comes from with the hanky code.
Historically, masters didn't wear harnesses, didn't wear collars. In the new age of leather, the signals have become muddled.
Very.
What was once a cover worn only by masters is now donned by weekend leather novices, along with harnesses and armbands worn on the right. T-shirts reading wide receiver or bottom are worn in conjunction with master's caps, black leather pants, and the toy du jour smartly clipped to the right side. Another common sight is a master's cap atop a thick black collar replete with large rings, a lock dangling from the frontmost, above elaborate harnesses, leather shorts, armbands on both wrists and both arms. Is it any wonder we don't address one another properly? Can one really blame the new and eager in our midst for their confusion? And what about the introduction of gender bending? What was once a nearly all-gay male culture became a mix of genders and orientations during the age of political correctness. While in the socio-political mood of all-inclusiveness, the intent is by nature gregarious, the result has been the adding of new words to the vocabulary, such as pansexualism.
Which means you like to do it with kitchen accoutrement.
Right. And there are many in the gay male leather culture who strongly resent the abstraction of the titles belonging to their gender. Many female dominants now insist upon being addressed as sir, and female submissives as boy.
B-O-I.
B-O-I. It became
Stop
obvious.
Using it, boys.
It became obvious that these did not create enough confusion. In the interest of accommodating the weekend players and the timid, a whole new genre of leather relationship was created in order to soften the titles belonging to the opposite roles of master and slave, making them more palatable to those who found the life itself too extreme for their tastes, yet in their fascination demanded inclusion. The genre Daddy Boy was born. Less rigid in structure and primarily dominant and submissive only in play or passing, the players still demand their share of the pot by insisting on being addressed this way or that. Part-time passive dominance or passive dominance want to be known as Daddy So-and-so, and their part-time or passive submissives as Boy So-and-so. Add the gender abstraction and what you have are female daddies and boys. This woman called Sir, that woman called Daddy, this woman called Boy. Not so clear anymore, is it? Anyone with the price of leather can purchase whatever leather pieces they desire without regard for what they represent or signify and may wear them however they wish. And if you're going to do it, buy them at Black Hawk Leather. That was an unsolicited advertisement. Leather is no longer the symbol of tradition or of traditional hierarchy. It is no longer earned. It no longer signifies the belonging of an individual to a tribe or their rank or title within that tribe. It has, for the most part, become a costume that is available in any color and combination to any who can afford to purchase it. They can walk amongst us and strut their stuff, demanding to be called Master of the Great and Glorious Temple of Zith, and expect to be accommodated. Okay, it's impolite to laugh at them, but hey, who could resist a snicker? Recognition of one's own station was part of standard protocol, and that recognition, properly observed, protected us all from predators. Slaves were not permitted to approach and speak to a master not known to them, except in complying with a direct order from their own master. Unowned slaves were not permitted to approach and or speak directly with a master whom they were not acquainted, period. The same held for masters. Masters were not permitted to approach or speak to an owned slave without the consent of that slave's master. Masters were not permitted to approach or speak to an unowned slave without an introduction. A slave addressing a master not his own addressed him as sir, and a master addressing a slave who is not his own addressed him by his first name. Masters addressed one another respectfully as sir. Slaves addressed one another by their first names. The words master and slave were only used during introductions or in reference. In everyday interaction, it was obvious who was who, if not by the way they were dressed, most certainly by the way they carried themselves, spoke, and were addressed. Careful observation of an individual's behavior and demeanor was employed before associations were even made possible. In addition, in always being introduced by another, there was always a chain of reference before an association. One sought and accepted or declined introductions, a social protocol with the safety of all inherent. Breaking that protocol meant that one was either in need of instruction or distance. Compassion and instruction for the new face, a novice, distance for the insistently ignorant and those whose behavior was unsavory or appeared to have questionable motives. Can these protocols be of help to us today in this watered-down leather world full of hapless sexual hedonists? They can if we desire order in our ranks. With the confusing changes, it won't be as simple as it was then, but we can do it if its value can be real to us. The name of the game in social protocol is respect. Respect for self, respect for our own houses, and respect for those around us. Now down to brass tacks. A male dominant should always be addressed as sir, no matter what your own station or self-identification may be. If you are a dominant yourself, and the dominant in question is a close personal friend, it is still wise to address him properly in an initial greeting, even if in familiarity you have agreed to be on a first-name protocol. Begin conversations with respect, and the tone is set for their duration. A female dominant should initially be addressed as ma'am. If she wishes to be addressed in another manner, she should be strong enough within herself to graciously correct you. Accept the correction with as much grace as as that in which it is offered to you, and comply. In all further meetings, continue to greet this individual in the way she has requested. Respect begets respect. A male dominant who is identified as a master should be referred to and introduced as such. A male dominant who is identified as a daddy should likewise be referred to and introduced as such. If you don't know how that person is identified, ask them. It really is that simple, and you'll find yourself far more respected for requesting the correct information than you will by making a possibly erroneous assumption. A female dominant who is identified as a mistress should be referred to and introduced as such. If the title preferred is master, lady, mistress, miss, ms, or daddy, the individually chosen moniker should be the one used to refer to or introduce that woman. All submissives should be addressed by their first names following the appropriate introduction. In reference or introduction, the preference may be boy or slave. Again, if you are not sure, ask. Collared submissives are proud, or should be, of their designation. Uncollared submissives may need the designation in order to secure the relationship they seek. Two rules that will assist you in maintaining a healthy perspective concerning protocol in the forms of address are, 1. Always err on the side of respect. 2. If you don't know, ask.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a stupid question.
No. If you don't have the information, don't assume anything. Ask somebody.
Yeah, and if you have to ask the same thing over and over and over again, put the beer down. made coffee or come out of Buzz's nose.
Or switch to tequila.
Yes, or switch to tequila and just pass out.
Because you're going to need it.
And do a couple of Jaeger bombs and go sleep in the trunk of your car.
I want Elizabeth to give me her recipe for cherry bombs.
Yes, gosh.
Only I had a really great idea for them. And Elizabeth, if you're listening, try this. The next time you do the cherry bombs, get some magic shell chocolate. And after you've cherry bombed them, dip them in the magic shell so you have chocolate-covered cherry bombs.
Them's good. But yeah, always err on the higher protocol. If you're not sure, number one, especially if you're a sub, if you don't know the dom, to me, I don't think it's a good idea to just walk up and introduce yourself.
No.
If you're a sub, the best thing to do is see who they're talking to, find somebody else who knows who that person is, because the leather and BDSM communities, everybody pretty much knows everybody. So if you say, find another sub or find somebody who you know and say, hey, who is that? Could I get an introduction? Or is it okay to go up and just introduce myself?
For instance, me. When you see me out...
Run the other way.
Run like hell. You generally see at least one, if not both of my boys with me. If you are a boy, ask one of my boys if they... boys can talk to boys without permission.
Yes.
That's a standing. You know, the boys can talk to boys. If you're a boy and you want to meet me, talk to my boy, get to know my boy, and if he thinks that it would be a good idea that I meet you, he will introduce us. That is part of his job in protecting me. Part of his job is to screen the people who want to meet me through him. He brings somebody to me that is unsavory, and he's the one that gets the whooping.
But again, always err on the higher protocol, as Buzz mentioned earlier. If it's a male dom, always address them as sir. If it's a female, always address them as ma'am. If it's a female dom.
Initially,
because if they prefer a different title, especially a lot of the female doms in the BDSM community prefer daddy or mistress, or... And most of the female doms I know of either go by mistress or daddy.
Right.
But... Ma'am is considered a high protocol statement, just like saying sir. And if they say I prefer to be called mistress, or call me daddy, you know, like Master Chess.
Yep.
Master Chess is a female. She has earned the right to be called master. So, she is a female, but she has a male designation.
And that is her preference, that is her choice.
That is her preference, that is her choice. But when I see her, I always say, good evening, ma'am. Or I will say, good evening, Master Chess.
Right.
And if I say ma'am, most of the time, she's okay with it. Sometimes
she'll bristle.
If she bristles, sir, I prefer sir.
Yeah, you get away with it because she knows you.
I get away with it, yeah.
But she still bristles.
Yeah, she still bristles. But she also understands that when I say it, it's a sign of respect. I'm not meaning anything by it. It is a term of respect, and she is a female, so that is my first inclination, because that was drilled in my head over and over again when I came into the leather community years and years and years and years.
You
and years
recognize and years. The gender of the person that you're speaking to, because in failing to do so, you are disrespectful.
Right.
That's the way we were mentored. That's the way we were taught. You recognize the gender of the person that you're speaking to, because to call them by the wrong gender, it'd be like walking up to
my biggest male
master and calling him ma'am.
Yeah. But so that my biggest problem is after a couple of cocktails, I have a real problem with S's and master chess.
Right.
It's chess with an S, yeah. But after a few, I start slurring. I'm like Master Chez, and I'll say Chez like with a Z, because I get sloppy with my S, and then Master Chez will turn around and she'll go, Chess.
Well, that's because...
What did you call me?
That's because she doesn't drink as heavily as you do.
Yeah. Well, it's rare when it happens. It's very rare when I get tipsy enough to start slurring words. But yeah, oh boy, I hear it.
Yeah, there's only so much you can forgive and so many times.
Master Chess, I know I did that to you last month. And again, I do apologize for saying Chess, but I had way too many beers that day, so... Forgive me, please.
You're getting shocked looks from the booth. Oh, you?
Yeah. Well, it was. We were in a relaxed atmosphere, it was like a little kind of just backyard barbecue kind of thing. And yeah, I had quite a few too many beers. And
no.
Not you. Yeah, no. I really don't drink that much.
You jest.
No, I used to. I used to go out and get S-faced all
He used to only allow himself one drink a day, but it had to come in a barrel with a handle on it.
Yeah. a barrel with a crazy straw. But, no, I mean, I could go out, and my favorite thing, you know, when they used to have, like, 50-cent drinks or, you know, like I always say, dollar vodka sundaes, love them. But, yeah, I can have... It depends on the liquor. As long as I stay with one type of liquor, I'm fine. But the minute I'll have three or four Roman Cokes, or I'll have a vodka, and then I'll have a beer or something, or I'll do a shot, then forget it, it's over. So, yeah, never mix, never worry. But, all yeah, right. Just... People always err on the high end of respect, whether you're in the leather scene or if you're in a BDSM scene. Just remember basic protocols, and one of the biggest I can say, I don't care if you're leather or if you're BDSM or if you're fetish, if you see a locked collar on somebody's neck, that means they are owned property.
Don't touch.
Two things. If you see they're wearing a collar with a lock on it, find out who their dom is and ask permission to speak to them, and never, ever, ever, ever touch a collar unless you put that collar on that person's neck. That's the fastest way to get your fingers broken, because I know a lot of leather boys and leather slaves that if you grab their collar, they will grab your hand and break your fingers.
Yeah, you will get hurt.
You will get hurt. That is like walking up to somebody and trying to take the wedding ring off their finger.
Likewise, masters such as myself, I catch you reaching for my boy's collar, and I'm likely to break your fingers.
Yeah, so just keep the respect
there.
That
collar doesn't belong to him. It belongs to me.
And just understand, and this is the problem, one of the problems I have with the BDSM community, is they think that because somebody's wearing a collar that they are public property. They are not.
And I find more and more that the BDSMers that I talk to in all these presentations that I give, I find more and more that they actually see the collar the same way we do. Most of them do. There are factions out there who believe that a collared slave is a slave to anybody who can bark orders. And
those are the people who get ostracized the fastest. Yeah. So please don't take your cues from them.
Yeah. Fortunately enough, even our BDSM brothers and sisters are learning and have learned and respect the collar for what it actually represents. It is a sign of ownership.
Keep in mind, a collar in the leather community is the same thing as a wedding ring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's just a different form of that in a different form of a relationship.
And it's a sacred symbol.
Yes. like I said, you wouldn't walk up to somebody, some woman, and, oh, what a beautiful wedding ring, try to yank it off their finger.
Yeah, please. It's unfortunate now. It's unfortunate now because a lot of the male prostitutes or club boys, the pass-around club boys, are starting to wear chains with locks because, oh, it's so pretty. When you're at a leather bar and you see a chain around somebody's neck with a lock hanging from it, that is not a necklace.
Yeah. My personal favorite is that we were out one evening and a circuit boy came in and he walked right up to one of Buzz's slaves and said, I love that necklace. Where did you get it? And, I mean, daggers of eat hot death shot out of the boy's eyes and he didn't speak. He didn't say a word. So the kid asked him again and he just turned around, looked at the kid and then looked away. Well, you're a bitch, aren't you? And turned around and walked off, and then we all busted out laughing. Yep. It was hysterical. So, yeah.
Funny how effective silence can be.
But again, it depends on the environment. You walk into, you know, South Beach or Rich's or JR's, some to them, it's a necklace. It's just like putting on a bracelet.
So it's you've got to shiny.
Understand the environment you're in, you know?
I was standing right next to Kirby once when one of the club kids walked up and asked him that. He walked up and I was grinning from behind a grimace at the time. He said, "That's a really pretty necklace. Where'd you get it?" Kirby said, "Don't talk to me without his permission." Well, you're a bitch. And I said, "It takes one to know one, honey."
Yeah.
This is where he got that. And if you want one, trust me.
Yeah, pass the test.
You haven't got what it takes to earn one.
Oh, yes, pass the test. So I think what we're going to do, we're going to take a break, hit a couple of songs, come back, have some closure here, and then we're going to head out for Roundtable. So, Wes, if you want to hit a couple more songs for us, we're going to listen to some more from Andy Bell's album, Nonstop.
Before we go to break, I know that out there, there are people listening, and I want you to know that I meant no offense whatsoever by anything that you heard tonight. These are just observations and hopefully admonitions. Again,
Buzz, we'll talk about this when we come back. That's what the closing, fabulous little closing ceremony is about. Let's hit a couple of songs and we'll come right back. And yeah, then we'll laugh.
We've reached a point of no return. It happens to us every time. Gotta tell us best you know. Fool around at every
You're Going to Be a Loser on a Big Time Show. That was Andy Bell off his new album, Nonstop, and you can get the listings off the Facebook page as well as kpft.org. Tonight, we had been talking about different leather, BDSM, and fetish cultures, how they came into existence, how they are blurring together, and how they are separating again and becoming their own strong entities once more, we can hope.
And now I can give my disclaimer.
Yes, Buzz's disclaimer. In no way, either Buzz nor I are implying or trying to say anything derogatory towards any of the three subcultures.
My purpose in pointing these out was simply to point out the very importance of each of the separate cultures. I'm not trying to offend anyone. If I did, terribly sorry, but I'm pointing out facts here. Trying in support of all three of these cultures. They all need to exist, and I support and celebrate the existence of all three separately, and how we share some similarities, and how we can honor one another by knowing more about each other.
And celebrate each other's differences, and understand that there are people who are looking for each, and they need each to be defined. And when we lose the definition, then all we do is confuse the new generation coming into the leather, BDSM, or fetish life.
Right.
Or lives. I don't know what you would call it. But yeah, I think basically what we're trying to say is
lifestyles.
There are three different cultures here that we're talking about that have been blurring together and starting to separate again. And they need to remain separate entities. They need to understand each other. And they need to celebrate each other's differences and respect each other's differences. And that is what is going to bring us closer together, not blurring and blending all three together, but celebrating the differences of and respecting the differences of.
Exactly.
So with that in mind, is there anything else we want to say with Leather Ties tonight? Or shall we just hit another song, do PSAs, and come back with Roundtable?
Well, I don't have anything else for you guys, but actually, before Roundtable, we have our MBB segment tonight.
We had the phone lines were lighting up, I noticed, while we were going through this. Was there anything that anybody addressed? That
people screaming and hollering at you on the air.
That's okay. Tell me what they're screaming and yelling about.
Nah, it was mainly towards our MBBs, because we got some people interested in being pen pals, so we're gonna talk about our MBBs. And
well, then we will close the other ties.
Those of you who are listening who are not aware of it, KPFT 90.1 is on Facebook. All you have to do is type in, when you get into your Facebook, type in KPFT and you will find it. There's not only the Facebook page, but there's a fan page. There's all kinds of neat stuff. And for After Hours, After Hours has its own fan page.
Yes.
Yep.
I've got them all.
Maintained by buddy.
And again, if you want to download Twisted Tines or any of the other things that we've been talking to tonight about, they have been written out. You can get them at HoustonLeatherBoys.net. They have them in their library archive.
Is it possible that they can, if I give them to the After Hours page, that they can be posted in notes?
I don't see why not.
Yeah.
Okay, I can send them to you if you like.
So yeah. we'll get it on the Facebook page.
Send
them
to my personal page, and I'll make sure they get up there.
Okay.
So we'll get that done. So we're going to turn it back over to Wes, do the MBBs. Have a good night. Thank you for listening to After Hours Leather Ties.
All right, Chris, anything before we go to PSAs? Because we got a couple minutes.
Good night, Dina.
No, so we'll do the MBB when we come back. Yeah, sure, with Facebook, we've got here the KPFT, in the After Hours site, which I'm actually working on more of.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's just one more thing I want to say. It's leather related. Everybody keep in mind, next weekend, the Boy of Montrose contest is going on at the Ripcord. The meet and greet starts at 9 o'clock or so, I think 8:30.
Yeah, it's 8:30 with the...
With the meet and greet, and then the contest itself starts at 9:30.
Yeah.
Come one, come all.
So, Boy Montrose, our Boy Montrose is going to be stepping down, and we are going to be electing a new Boy of Montrose. So, everybody go out to the Ripcord and enjoy and have fun, and let's get our new Boy of Montrose a good start.
And one other thing I think we ought to promote there, because it's going to be going on before our next Leather Tie segment, is Ace Weekend.
Yes, Ace Weekend is also coming up in San Antonio.
Yes.
That's the first weekend in August.
Yes.
And for those of you that aren't familiar, go to aceweekend.com. It is San Antonio's version of Louis Weekend. and it is an absolute blast. If you've never
this year's their 10th anniversary.
Yes, it's their 10th anniversary. It's going to be a big Ace weekend. And if you haven't been, go. It is an absolute blast.
Oh, yeah. San Antonio people are so welcoming to the Houston folks. They even, at their closing show, they have their own show of shows, very much like ours. They make a point of thanking Houston
people.
Shaming all the Houston people. They shame us. They drag us out onto their stage and make us do weird things.
Yeah, but you'll see a lot of us there, if not all of us here from KPFT.
So, in other words, they treat us like Lloyd does during the board show.
Pretty much.
Yeah, when we do the opening number for the show,
you wouldn't believe what they did to Lloyd and Robert last year at Ace. they had them on the floor.
Evil.
So hopefully we'll have some information about what happened there. I'm not sure yet if I'm going or not. It depends on what the finances are.
Right.
Well, I'm just not sure if we can get the weekend off, but I plan to be there. So I'm sorry. You go back to your Facebook page thing.
I wanted to make sure. I wanted to make sure we talked. I was just trying to fill in time, and then suddenly remembered Ace weekend only because I approved the message earlier today.
Yeah. Yeah. Just keep in mind, anytime you have a 5, 10, 15 year anniversary, that's going to be a big year. So Ace weekend is going to be an absolute blowout this year. So. If you can get to San Antonio, go. It's aceweekend.com.
All right, let's go to our PSAs, Top of the Hour, MBBs, and Roundtable, all coming up.
Oh, yeah. The Cuba Solidarity Committee invites you to a party. We have prepared a party for you to share friendship, solidarity, and support for the Pastors for Peace humanitarian aid to the people of Cuba.
All year long, you have worked tirelessly for justice and peace. Couldn't it be incredible to take a break to party and dance in support of a noble cause?
This is your chance.
Wear your dancing shoes and bring lots of energy.
Enjoy a night of music, food, and dance.
Vengan todos a bailar y divertirse.
Saturday, July 10th, from 7 to 11 p.m.
at the Houston Institute for Culture, 708 Telephone Road.
For more info, call Ayana at 832-704-1007. Brought to you by the Cuba Solidarity Committee.
KPFT, Houston.
Solo tengo la luna, no tengo ni esta fortuna, pero me sobra cariño y me sobra la
Family Promised in Southeast Harris County is holding a fundraiser at both Casa Olay's in Pasadena on Friday, July 16th from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Contact Hank at Family Promise at 281-991-1084 to get your flyer for the fundraiser. A portion of your bill will go to Family Promise's work with homeless families. Get your flyer and come hungry. KPFT Houston.
You've been listening to this. You're listening to After Hours. No, you've. KPFT Houston, screw it.
Do it right.
You're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude here on listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast. KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, always the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
Should we do a song?
Oh, play some music.
Take
Andy Bellathon.
What was that?
That Andy was Bell. Andy Bell.
Ah.
A whole marathon of Andy Bell tonight.
I see.
Yeah, we did about, let's see, 7 songs by Andy Bell tonight.
Wow.
All from his new album, Nonstop, that, uh-huh. that last song being the title song yeah. from the album.
I'm not sure if that was punishment or praise for Kirby, is what I heard.
Ooh.
Well, from what I understand, it's one of Kirby's favorites or something like mm-hmm. that.
And since no one else will play the old queen.
Andy Bell just keeps churning out good stuff year after year. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And we saw him, what, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, about, yeah. He was along a part of Cyndi Lauper's True Colors tour.
Uh-huh. And yeah. he's still working it. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So, well, we have some MBB letters?
Well, yes. We have one.
Okay.
From our good friend,
Daryl.
Daryl. Oh. Yeah. Daryl's written us once again.
Daryl, how you doing?
And Daryl starts off, "Hello, Jimmy, Wes, and Chris."
Mm-hmm.
Chris got last billing. Ha ha ha.
Did he spell your name right, Fine?
He spelled it with a double S. It's a single S there, Daryl.
That's okay.
That's all right. He spelled Chris with an E.
I've been called worse. My family members, yeah. so.
He says he really hopes we receive his letter in good spirits,
yes.
but most of all in good health.
Well, mostly.
So, says all of us are awesome, including Judy, who yeah. he's been missing. He's been missing her great sense of humor.
Well, she'll be here next week for yeah. the GCAM segment.
Yeah. He also says that he wants us to know that he's begun to stay up all night until 4 a.m. to listen to our whole show.
Wow. You are a trooper.
Yeah. That's a commitment that people on the show don't make.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling you. He's done this even though they call breakfast like 7 to 10 minutes after our show is over.
Oh, my God.
Wow. So.
Does he have to work on Sundays?
He doesn't say in this letter.
Boy, I hope
he does. He started doing this last weekend.
Uh-huh.
And he dates it here, Saturday, 7/3/2010. He also says, "Yes, Jimmy, I heard what you asked me to do last weekend on the show. So, yes, I will go ahead and draw you, or should I explain, yes, I did draw an outline of my member."
Wow.
Try not to drool.
Wow.
Jimmy, quit licking the paper. That's what we were keeping a surprise from you.
Whoa.
Let me go ahead.
That
and
is a very nice surprise.
Let me go ahead and explain what he has here.
I would like to take the top one and work it to
the other one. Yeah.
To, yeah. yeah, make it become the next one.
He says
it. Send that off and have it made into a book, I'm sure.
Yeah. He says, "In fact, I drew 2 different outlines of his member
uh-huh.
for you to check out."
Yes, you did.
First, he got his member hard
uh-huh.
and drew the outline.
Yes.
And when he went limp after he helped himself out.
Oh.
Ah, yes.
He outlined his member as the size of it, length and width, hard and limp. So
yes.
all of you have the idea of actual size of
wow.
it.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
He says, "So he says, go ahead and show Judy and any of her bisexual friends. I'm not shy.
Uh-huh.
I've been told a lot down through the years that I look big and also nice."
Nice mushroom head going on.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, thank you, Daryl. Yeah.
So we know how much you like cream and mushroom, Jimmy.
Oh.
Yep. Let's see here.
I'm keeping this one.
Yeah, your tongue's getting harder.
Oh, boy, howdy.
You got to see where the paper cuts are going to be.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Thank you, Daryl.
Trying to get to the meat and potatoes here.
So to
speak.
Hit
the arrow button.
So what else does he have to say?
Back on Saturday, 6/19, when you received my last letter and you were all on this date.
Uh-huh.
And the next Saturday you received my letter.
Yes.
Explaining to you that all of the radio stations had faded out and you had answered my previous questions
yeah.
I had asked. And the following Saturday, 6/26, you all acknowledged that you'd received my letter explaining to you all that
my radio had faded out. So
yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Damn.
So he's, again, once again, asked the questions. Jimmy, what type of angel do you want drawn? So if you want to answer that one real quick.
Any kind, but I particularly like male angels.
Chris is having a hard time with the keyboard over here. It's kind of messed up.
Are the keys stuck together or what?
No, sometimes they just won't. It just won't enter from the keyboard.
Oh, I see.
See, most angels are either non-sexual or female.
I see.
Male angels can be kind of rare to find.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah,
it's kind of like male fairies. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't work. Whatever that is.
Yeah.
I had a special get the two male fairies you've seen.
Yes. Yes.
Because they're so.
Okay,
let's
next.
See here. Next question. Jimmy, my ally wanted me to ask you,
mm-hmm.
after you see the drawing and if you think it is good enough for him to do further, and any other types of drawings good enough to sell, would you, Chris and Wes, tell others about him drawing whatever anybody would be interested in for a reasonable purchase.
Hell yeah.
Because it would be his only source of income.
Sure, I understand that.
So I don't mind if you guys don't.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
MBBs are some of the best artists I've ever seen.
Yes, we've gotten some pretty good stuff from some of our MBBs.
MBB art is just marvelous.
Yeah.
We've got we've received a lot of it over the years. And a lot of it is
been spectacular.
Yeah, spectacular. Not only yeah. We have a lot of it. I've put it in the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum of GLBT History Inc.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys out there, your art may end up in a museum. Yeah. Never know.
You're not getting my get wealth card until I'm dead.
Okay. And I've got several pieces hanging on walls of my apartment.
Yeah. His next question was, he says, since I feel like I could offer something to the show by writing poetry, if he wrote a poem and sent it to us, would we read the poem?
Oh, yeah.
Of course we would.
Oh, yeah. I love poetry.
So.
And ta-da, we have Merlin here, who also writes poetry.
Yep.
And him.
Let's see.
You write poetry?
I haven't done it in a while, but I do have. I have amassed a small collection that I have written over the past years or so.
That's how we.
Yeah,
really,
but once was a boy from Nantucket doesn't count.
No.
None of his starts that way.
No, I'm not like a certain other person who comes around here once in a while.
Yes, we know.
Yeah.
Where is?
Okay.
Next.
It's what I get for. Oh, there it is. Hold on. Yeah, it's pretty bad when trying to link to Jezebel.com.
Oh, wow.
Come on.
He mentions he only has one picture of himself.
Really?
He wants to know if he sent it to us, if we would send it back.
Yes.
If we would make a copy and then send it back to
yes,
him.
Yes, I'll do that.
So, let's see. Let's see, the next question. Would you all send me a signed picture of each or of all of us?
Oh.
Yeah, we've got to talk to Paul about getting especially a picture from the Pride Parade,
mm-hmm.
with three of us in the car.
Oh, yeah. That
definitely
want
to get that.
One.
Then we need to see about getting another group shot of the whole gang
mm-hmm.
here.
Yeah. So we'll work on that and get that to you, Daryl. Let's see.
I'll be the one in the pink.
And in fact, he mentions that we mentioned the gay pride pictures and all that.
Oh yeah.
During the July 3rd show, he says, "Would one of you please consider sending me some copies of the gay pride pictures?" And he's really curious and never seen what one has been like.
Boy, I haven't seen a pride parade in. Since about 1986, 87. Because I've been in.
You've been in them since then.
Ever since then.
I've only ever seen one parade in the last 9 years.
Well, actually, I did get to see most of one parade in 1997 when I was the male Grand Marshal.
Yeah.
So I was in the very beginning of the parade, and you know, when it ended, I got to watch the rest of it.
Yeah. All right. Let's quickly move through these last few questions here. Good Lord. I didn't realize how many there were. Jimmy, would you give it some thought of writing to him?
I will give it some thought. No promises. I'm a lousy letter writer.
No, but we know how much you love to lick the stamps.
I like to lick a lot of things. I just don't get the opportunity.
If he stops liking that, we have to bury him. Because he's
yes.
I'm going to paraphrase this next question.
Okay.
And change a few of the words here.
Okay.
A lick and stick experience that you mentioned on the 26th, on our show on the 26th.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to know if you would be... If you would
yes,
do
I would.
That with him.
Yeah, oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Since he is bi-curious.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, once you see me, you may change your mind. We have faces for radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those aren't laugh lines around Jimmy's mouth. Those are stretch marks.
And oddly enough, Jimmy won't argue with that.
No, I can't. I can't.
That's our Jimmy.
Two more questions here. He says, even if and when all of us receive or don't receive a letter from mm-hmm. him, will we please remember him out there listening to us and acknowledge him by each of us saying hello?
We sure will.
Well, hello.
Well, hello there.
Hey.
And then his final question here. Mm-hmm. Please be honest. You won't hurt his feelings.
Okay.
Or disappoint or make him feel let down.
Okay.
Please be honest as far as... Oh, width and size and what you think about the actual size of his member.
I think I will have trouble getting my orifice around it.
Jimmy might have to dislocate his jaw. Mm.
Become a snake.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's impressive.
Yeah. And let's see here. Just to finish off his letter real quick.
Mm-hmm.
He said he wants to thank us all for the best radio show in this part of Texas.
Wait, thank you.
And thank you for listening.
And thanks us for being an inspiration to him and lifting his spirits each week and giving him something to look forward to from weekend to weekend.
I'm glad you enjoy it.
Chris has a look on his face like, is he listening to the same show?
Yeah, no, we have fun doing this show. You know, it's 4 hours of queer life and...
Queer live, queer music.
Warts and all.
Yeah. Warts and all, yes.
He states also, when he comes up for parole in December,
he better come to the station.
He would really, really like to come up to KPFT and be a guest on the show.
You bet.
He says that would be so awesome. Says, take care and God bless. Sincerely, Daryl.
Thank you, Daryl.
Thanks for writing.
Yeah, we had a second shout out. One of the callers wanted to give a shout out to Sam up in the women's unit.
Hey, Sam.
Wanted to say he loves him.
Oh, that's nice.
Also, just for one of our callers that's been listening to the show tonight and everything and has been patiently waiting for our MBB segment tonight, mm-hmm. he has asked for some information to be pen pals with one of our MBBs.
Hell yeah.
And I think, do you have the envelope in there?
I do.
If you could go ahead and read off Daryl's information, I think that would be a perfect match.
Okay. Do we have permission to do this?
I believe we do.
Okay.
I think. Well, why don't we just do it like the way we say there? Contact us, and then we'll send the information to you instead of putting it out over
easier.
The airwaves, just in case.
Yeah.
He has asked for. He has asked us to. I mean, if you feel comfortable, he has given us permission to give us his name on the air with his unit.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I'd forgotten that if it was Daryl or that other guy.
Actually, both of them.
Okay. Daryl Barnett. Barnett, and his number is 1195962. The Stringfellow Unit, 1200 FM 655, Rocheron, Texas, 77583. That's Daryl Barnett, number 1195962. And he's at the String Fellow Unit, 1200 FM 655, Rosharon, Texas, 77583.
And also, if you want to get in touch with one of them and do that, you can contact us at afterhours@kpft, mm-hmm. or go ahead and just write your letter, send it to us here at the station at 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, and Texas, 77006, and we'll forward it on for you.
We will do it.
Especially if you don't want to have your address known, because mm-hmm. I know there's some concerns.
Yeah.
We'll play the middleman on that.
Sure. Yeah.
Or you can email it to us, afterhours@kpft.org. We'll be glad to go ahead and print that out and forward that on also.
Sure.
Yeah, we don't mind being middlemen.
Absolutely.
Not at all.
I love being in the middle.
Of course you do, Jimmy.
Well, yeah.
On to the round table.
Time for a round table. Let's play some round table.
What do you got?
I've got a follow-up to a story that once I read the story, the whole thing of it there, it kind of touched me a little bit more. Last week we talked about the Imperial Court of all Alaska float.
Yes.
That was used in the Pride Parade that was going to be used in the 4th of July Parade, mm-hmm. but was destroyed by fire.
Yes. Right.
Here's the follow-up.
Oh.
The gay pride float in honor of the Imperial Court of all Alaska meant to be entered in Anchorage's 4th of July parade that was all but destroyed in a suspicious fire was replaced in less than 48 hours by volunteers with the above entry. It was they recreated it as a phoenix.
Wow.
Rising from the ashes. That. Yes.
Cool. That's awesome. Nice. Now, here's where it really gets good.
Oh.
Phoenix Rising looked good enough to win this year's grand prize.
Whoa. Woo-hoo.
Congratulations to them.
But wait.
There's more.
With materials donated by Home Depot, Office Max, Joann's Fabrics, and many other local businesses.
Wow.
That's really great.
That's the part that got me.
That's wow. really that's community cool. there.
Yeah.
Alaska must be a very different state.
Yeah.
Except for a couple of parents in that city, but I won't go there.
Moving on.
So what happened to the chloroform and the rags in your trunk?
You're not Chris Hansen. You can't ask that question. Congrats to all who participated, especially to straight ally Colleen Crinklaw, mm-hmm. the Grand Duchess of Anchorage's Imperial Court, and this cause's local Wonder Woman, which says that Alaska gays can apparently stand the heat, so definitely plan to stay in the kitchen.
Wow.
There's a little comment here. Bonus points to the leader of the float parade. There was a kid named Phoenix.
Oh.
Cute little toehead kid, probably 6 or 7, carrying a rainbow flag that's bigger than him.
He could be wrapped up in it and look like a giant burrito.
But like, I thought, especially hearing that local businesses.
Yeah, that's really amazing.
Local and national change chipped in to help get that. And
that was just amazing.
You know,
and it was a beautiful float, because I saw the picture.
There, you know, Anchorage is not a big town. And even if it's a national chain, they've got to be more mom and pop about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, no details on the fire and that. I guess I'll go with this one here. I guess it falls a little bit under hypocrisies.
It's a follow-up to our hypocrisy.
Oh.
Well, no, this is not a follow-up on this one. This is a brand-new story.
What is it?
This is a brand-new story.
Okay.
A well-known Roman Catholic priest who stole $1.3 million.
Actually, yes, it is a follow-up because you read this one before.
Did I?
Yes. It's a different article, though. Go ahead.
That's where it hadn't. From the Sacred Heart Parish over 7 years, has he grown to hate being a priest because the archdiocese has given him the worst church assignments? Now I'm starting to sound familiar there.
Mm-hmm.
But he used church funds to pay for hotels, restaurant meals, clothing, and male escorts.
Oh, my God.
Oh, oops.
Gray turned himself into authorities Tuesday morning and was arraigned in Waterbury Superior Court. Bail was set at $750,000.
Ooh, I bet he sat in jail.
Waterbury police launched an investigation after the archdiocese came to them in May that it uncovered unauthorized payments from church funds to accounts held by Gray and other suspicious transactions. That's right, I did cover that one there because I was other stories
I can't imagine the larger church was all that thrilled with the idea of paying for that.
I mean, these people must be idiots.
Well, they ripped them off for 1.3.
Well, it took them 7 years to do it.
700 and something in bail? I don't think so.
Now, there was an interesting side note. I remember on one of the blogs that I read on this that this man has been defrocked now. He's no longer able to practice his as a faith minister of faith. And he had a strange note in there saying, okay, this man paid for prostitutes, adults. He paid adult men to have sex with him, allegedly, and they defrocked him. But when the parish priest diddles one of the altar boys, they don't defrock him. They just move him somewhere else.
That doesn't make any sense.
I think it was the payment part that pissed him off the most. Yeah. You know, as a Catholic, I know you don't screw with our money.
But you know, even it's $1.3 million, and even though it's over 7 years, I mean, think about it. That's almost $200,000 a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did they not see this?
Do math like that. That's
a hell of a lot
of
money.
That's a hell of a lot of money to go disappearing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
With nobody going, where'd it go?
Yeah, that's like, what, almost $10,000 a month?
Yeah.
A little over $10,000?
Or more than that.
Well, yeah. Let's do a couple crime blotter things here.
This just in.
Port New Richey, Florida. A Florida woman is jailed after allegedly assaulting her girlfriend with a feces-filled cat litter box.
That's just crappy.
Now, I know from personal experience that's a really FCC job.
Port New Richey police say Christian Stiller allegedly attacked Rachel Switzer Wednesday after Switzer refused to give her Roxycodone pills. The St. Petersburg Times reported on Friday. Stiller allegedly broke through their bedroom door, picked up the litter box, and went after Switzer with it. Police said Switzer wound up with cat feces in her hair, her face, her hair, and ears. The cat litter was coating her hair. She also alleged she was slapped and choked by Stiller. Slater is being held without bail in the Land O'Lakes jail.
I wonder if they make butter in there.
That's the hard time. charged initially with domestic battery by strangulation while authorities investigate whether additional charges are warranted. It was lesbians, it had involved cats, and I figured I had to go.
Well, at least they weren't flinging tuna at each other, I guess.
Bump.
From Canada. Stephen Paul Boone, the HIV-positive Canadian man who authorities named and have identified in public reports as sexually transmitting hazard to your health, has seen charges against him upgraded to attempted murder. Boone was arrested in May after an 18-year-old man said he contracted an infectious disease after having unprotected sex multiple times with Boone, whom he met online. As Boone awaits trial, he has something new to fret over, 4 counts of attempted murder. Apparently, after additional men came forward following health officials' open call to Boone's sex partners. He also faced the charges of administrating a noxious substance, yes, HIV. That brings Boone's grand total of counts against him to 31.
Whoa.
Scrooge seems like an apt pro term.
Yeah, not in a good way.
Okay. So, I mean, 4 counts of attempted murder and then administering a noxious substance. Almost sounds like that case where a guy was wanting people to fart on him.
Just goes to tell you, make sure you're disclosing.
Let's go to this one here.
Uh-oh, this sounds good.
Or do I save it because I got a link to it? Nah, because that's my the nanny dying is the final story. I'll just do this one because it's court news.
Oh, okay.
Please, another police blotter. Daytona Beach, Florida. Get ready for this, boys and girls. A Florida appellate court has ruled it's perfectly legal that a man to sit in his pickup truck outside a convenience store in the presence of a child and wave and insert into his mouth a long cylindrical plastic sex toy commonly referred to as a dildo.
So, I guess...
Boy, I got quiet there for a second.
So, I guess if, you know, I have to explain... If I have to explain this to a little kid, I'd just tell him, well, it's a different kind of candy.
Once again, the Florida appellate court has ruled it's perfectly legal for a man to sit in a pickup truck outside a convenience store and suck on a dildo.
I have one question.
Yeah?
What?
That is what David Lowe was doing in December 2008 outside the Stop and Shop on Ponce de Leon Boulevard in Brooksville, according to police records. And that's what got Lowe, 47, arrested on charges of lewd or lascivious exhibition. That makes it a felony to, in the presence of someone under 16, commit, quote, a sexual act involving the simulation of any act involving sexual activity, unquote.
But he wasn't performing it on
What if he was
else?
Doing it to a Coke bottle?
Ding, 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 ding. The Fifth District Court of Appeal in Daytona Beach ruled last week that all, however, what Lowe was doing did not involve simulated sexual activity. Oh, wait, I'm starting again. The Fifth District Court of Appeal in Daytona Beach ruled last week, however, that what Lowe was doing did not involve simulated sexual activity, but Brooksville police sure thought it did. They were called after witnesses said Lowe was sitting in his truck around 5:40 p.m. on December 28, 2008, waving a plastic skin-colored device at women emerging from the convenience store and then placing it in his mouth. The mother of a 7-year-old girl who watched from an adjacent parking lot called police after she and her daughter witnessed the behavior, and the child started asking, "What's that man doing, Mommy?" According to the reports, police stopped Lowe in his truck
apparently
after...
Apparently what her mom won't do.
just sneak in on Mommy. Police stopped Lowe in his truck as he tried to leave the convenience store. He denied having the sex toy. The officer noted that Lowe smelled of alcohol and was wearing sweatpants that were wet and evincing an erection. A search of the truck turned up an open Busch beer can and a lubricated dildo within reach. After posting a $5,000 bond, Lowe retained court attorney Kurt Campbell, who apparently read very closely the statute Lowe was accused of violating and found the behavior is not a crime in Florida. Hernando County District County Circuit Judge Jack Springfield disagreed, though, and denied Lowe's motion to dismiss. So Lowe pleaded not guilty to the charge, reserving this right to appeal the denial of his motion to dismiss.
Actually, no contest, which is different from not guilty.
What did I say? No contest? I thought I said no contest.
No, you said not guilty.
I'm sorry. He pled no contest. Nulla contendere. The judge sentenced him to the one day he already served in jail before posting bond without adjudication of guilt and ordered 2 years probation, which included alcohol abuse treatment. But last week, the Fifth District Court found Lowe's mission to dismiss should have been granted and remanded the case to Hernando County with orders that it be discharged. The reason, what Lowe was simulating was not sexual activity as defined by Florida law. Depends on your definition of is. The law says sexual activity is, quote, the oral, anal, or vaginal penetration by or union with the sexual organ of another, or the anal or vaginal penetration of another by another by any other object. The court found that Lowe did not simulate the act of oral sex with the sexual organ of another. The dildo was not another was not near another person's genitalia, and it was apparent that he was simulating oral sex with an object. His actions, although clearly rude and offensive, did not violate the express terms of the statute.
Wow, that's mincing words.
Isn't it?
Really?
But as really it says, passing. Oral sex is it's with oral sex is with the sexual organ of another, and the other object is only says anal or vaginal. So if you stick it in their ear, you're still okay.
Yeah. Or you can stick it in their eye.
In his ear, apparently didn't have a. It would have fit where his brain's supposed to be.
Well, that's where he was putting it.
I thought that was just kind of a cutesy story.
Depends on your definition of cutesy.
So here's another crime story that kind of starts bad, then starts kind of good, then kind of starts going bad.
Yeah. Alrighty. Isn't that most of our stories?
Yeah.
They're just bad.
The Reverend Josh Noblet of St. Mark United Methodist Church in Atlanta. And
whoa. His name again?
Noblet.
Noblet?
Noblet.
Noblet?
Alrighty then.
N-O-B-L-I-T-T.
Okay.
Noblet.
We're not asking about how big he is. Oh, that's his name. I'm sorry.
It's a reverend.
Okay.
From
the
United.
Name speaks for itself.
Yes.
And his partner, Trent, were enjoying a picnic dinner in Piedmont Park when a trio of men approached them, asked if they were gay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, from Atlanta, huh?
Yeah. Said they should beat the pair for it and soon returned with a stick.
Oh.
That's when things got awesome. Then quickly, less awesome.
Uh-oh. What happened?
It seemed that Josh and Trent would be able to fend off their attackers, the Georgia Voice notes. The three youths walked off, but returned later, one of them carrying a large stick, Noblet said. He started wielding the stick, and they were demanding money, Noblet said. Noblet said he was able to grab the stick from his assailant and hit him over the head with it.
Good. Oh, good for him.
He said his partner, who knows karate, kicked the others in the face.
Good.
We fought back against these three, Noblet said. Except not.
What?
Oh.
When Noblet called 911 to report what he and his partner were being attacked, one of the three men allegedly called someone, and between 8 to 10 others showed up quickly on bicycles and surrounded the two men.
Oh, my God.
They came out of nowhere, Noblet said. One of the men who rode up on the bike had a handgun.
Oh, great.
He put the gun to Noblet's temple demanding money, Noblet said. I told him everything you want is on the blanket, Noblet said. The assailants allegedly took Noblet's wallet, phone, keys, and his partner's phone and ran off. And what's this? The Atlanta Police Department responded quickly, nabbing 6 of the suspects.
All right.
Good.
And respectfully, Reed didn't dismiss the pair of some fags looking for trouble. Maybe the aftermath of the Atlanta Eagle Bar raid has brought peace between the city police and gays.
Finally.
On a related note, someone's probably flying from Houston to Atlanta to try and get them out of jail.
Are they going to use a gay panic defense?
Yeah, right.
Probably.
Somehow, I don't see that washing 10 to 1. I really don't.
Or was it because they were the way they were dressed?
Let's go to let's do a World Cup kind of story. Interesting story that made Breitbart, which is right wing. He's Drudge Report's go-to guy for news stories.
Oh, okay.
I see. Had an interesting story on South African lesbians who find their refuge in football, soccer.
Mm.
On a dusty field where Shago Mufokin's football team plays. Please remember, if I say football, I mean soccer.
Yes.
She tries to forget how she was violently beaten the week before for being a lesbian in South Africa's townships. He called me a faggot, lesbian, dirty monkey. I was bleeding on the floor when my mother arrived and defended me. But I did not press charges because he said he would lay charges against me and my mother for assault.
What?
Against my mother for assault. I guess her mom kicked butt trying to get him back.
Hmm.
All the women on our team, the chosen few, are lesbians who have similarly suffered insults, violence, and all too often rape. Being a lesbian is like being a soldier. You don't sleep at night, the 22-year-old said. She worries every time she leaves her home at night that she could become a victim of corrective rape, where attackers justify as a cure for homosexuality.
Yeah, right.
It's a problem widespread in the country where women generally suffer high levels of violence. Nearly half of South African women will be raped at least once in their life.
Oh, my God.
She will.
The other half more than that.
Hatred of lesbians put them at particular risk, including even of murder. South Africa's post-apartheid constitution grants equal rights to gays, but only on paper, says activist Emily Craven. She coordinates the joint working group gathering 26 gay organizations, and at least 10 lesbians have been killed over the last 5 years. Only two men have been convicted, in the case of Iude Simelane, a professional woman footballer who was gang-raped and killed in 2008.
Dang.
Yeah, I saw that on the World News on PBS.
I have a feeling that... And I hate to say this, I think this is in the black community. I think if you're a white gay, you have it a lot better.
It's. I think it comes a lot more from there's still that tribal mentality in there.
Yes.
A side note with the World Cup that saw on one of the websites, they said it's interesting that the three countries that are involved in the final tomorrow, South Africa being the host.
Mm-hmm.
The Netherlands, who is competing against Spain, are all countries that recognize gay marriage.
Yes. Amazing.
Wow.
Yes, and a law is only as good as it is enforced.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were talking about the townships, and that's where the black people live.
In the part there, and you know, it's, and it goes on talking about how the fact that the women are using this, using the camaraderie of being on a soccer team. And being able to, you know, compete and, you know, have that moment of their life when they're going to compete in the in the gay games that'll be going on in Cologne, Germany later in July, later this month.
That's great.
It'll be the group's third time at the international event. It represents a small victory in a country where women's soccer is not taken seriously.
I'll bet it isn't.
Hmm. As it is in many countries. You know, the United States is the opposite. We support the women more than we do the men's soccer team because
Well, soccer.
The women win.
But you know, look at women's basketball.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a sad thing we had here in Houston where we had a team,
and we had a dynasty, it lost
the ownership and bounced around.
And that was it. It's gone.
Staying in England, men in some communities in the UK are being forced into marriage because their families suspect they are gay or bisexual. The British government has revealed.
How can that happen?
Here's the twisted part.
Heard the fairy shotgun wedding?
Yeah. Now, here's who put out the report. The Forced Marriage Unit. The FMU says there's been a surge in such cases. Over the past year, the number of calls from men to the unit increased by 65%, from 134 in 2008 to 220 in 2009.
I'm still not understanding how you can force somebody to get married.
Wait, we're not done yet.
You berate him into doing it, I guess. I don't know. The part is, the reason I got is the article I linked on this says, at the end of it goes, there's an actual government agency called the Forced Marriage Unit.
Yeah, really?
In England.
Oh, there is?
Yeah, that's what he just, yeah.
Christ.
In all, 1,682 forced marriages were reported to the FMU, a joint UK Home Office Foreign Office body last year. Of those, the call suggests 14% involved a man being forced into a union, but the unit believes the true figure may be as high as 1 in 5. Most victims are aged from 15 to 24, but the FMU recently received a call to its helpline from a 62-year-old widower whose family was trying to force him to marry a 35-year-old woman because they no longer wanted to care for him.
Oh, my God.
Cases also include an underage man taken to Pakistan and forcibly engaged to his 5-year-old cousin. Many calls come from men linked to Pakistan, and followed by India and Bangladesh.
Oh, okay.
It has also received calls from British men with links to Middle East, Africa, and Eastern Europe.
Okay, so it's...
Now it's coming a little more clear.
According to the FMU, incidents traditionally increase during the summer. Professionals and communities can be very intolerant towards men being forced into marriage, even if they've learned to be sympathetic to women in the same situation. It's hard to persuade people to believe it even happens.
Yeah. Duh.
And that came out of the Irish Times.
Whatever happened to just say no?
Well, you've got to remember that we're talking about marriage as the institution of, in that one case specifically, you hear it of, it's to exchange property that you could, that you cannot have. And instead of, in this case, it's a reverse of where it's the man trying to make sure his property, his daughter, and his wife are taken care of after he passes on, as well as his home and his farm and his business. Which is what marriage was created to be. That this was a case where we don't want to take care of our great uncle, so we're gonna hire him a woman to be his wife, and she'll take care of him.
It's basically they want their family member to bang Ladesh, not Paresh. I guess would be the one.
I guess it's when you were raised in a tight family unit. Mm-hmm. And you're either going to marry this person or lose the family unit.
And the countries you're talking about have strict customs. And once again, it's a different, in a way, it's a tribal system. It's a caste system and you have certain expectations you have to do.
And you would not be accepted by anyone.
Yeah. You have to put family first before yourself.
And this is being allowed to happen in the UK?
Well, it's... I think with the UK, there are much of a melting pot as we are in the United States, but they don't melt, they don't turn the fire up as much to melt it so that like we say in the United States, where you want to get homogeneity.
Yeah.
You know.
There's a big problem in the UK and in the Netherlands with a lot of Muslim people moving in and wanting to change the laws to more religious type laws.
Yes.
Bring in Sharia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Also, staying with England, I wanted to pass this on because a lot of gay men are fans of the British series Abfab, Absolutely Fabulous.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
It's definitely recently been announced that Jennifer Saunders is battling breast cancer.
Oh,
really?
Updated reports are saying that she's actually beat it.
Mm-hmm.
She's in remission?
She's in remission that. That's good. This one from Delisted, they always like to have fun on this stuff. But no, not Eddie Monsoon. At Fab Jennifer Saunders, the woman I would give my last drop of vodka to if she asked for it, has been battling breast cancer for the past 8 months. Don't run down to the university and get that bitch troll Safi to open up a can of heartache just yet, because the BBC reports Jennifer has been told by her doctors that cancer is in remission after undergoing months of treatment.
That's really great news.
That is great.
Jennifer was recently seen at Wimbledon wearing a bandana and a wig. This caused a few nosy hoes to start speculating something.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer's rep said she won't talk about it now or ever will, so just leave the Get Better Sweetie Darling card from LaCroix on her doorstep and keep walking.
There you go. There you go. I don't know why they make such a big deal of LaCroix. I think he's a terrible designer. He's horrible patterns in his fabric.
It sounds so French.
It is.
Yes.
Le Croix.
One thing with
bless you.
Well, I always
escargot
had a cross on it too.
Is French. I don't like that.
On Queerty, they had an article called Five Things London Pride is Doing to Outshine Your City.
Oh, okay.
And the interesting thing is this was apparently written by a Texan.
Oh.
Some British blokes invited Queerty contributor Daniel Villarreal to walk in the London Pride Parade over the weekend. He's going to share part of his adventure with you for the tax write-off. Even though I'm a proud Dallas native, I have to admit that our pride parade isn't all that.
Tell me about it.
I've heard about that.
It's not even a pride parade. It's the Alan Ross Freedom Day parade.
I had,
hello, what's that mean?
1,000-some-odd folks standing next to a face-melting heat to watch a bunch of queers mosey down Dallas Gay Strip into the nearby park. It's fun, especially if you're a Christian protester. But it cannot hold a candle to London's pride supernovic brilliance. In fact, I'd wager a shilling that London Pride puts your city's celebration to shame. And I'm not just saying that because it let me march in the front of the parade. After seeing it for myself, I figured out five ways London Pride kicks your pride's ass.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's going to take a moment sometimes for some of these to click open here.
Okay.
This is from Queerty, though, like I said, Q-U-E-E-R-T-Y. The conservative mayor marches at the front of the parade. Okay, so blonde mop mayor, London Mayor Boris Johnson once compared gay marriage to marrying a dog and supported a bill that would stop city councils from promoting homosexuality.
Wow.
But he cleared his schedule to march in the parade alongside London's queer activists and kicked off the event by saying the British government should support gay marriage.
Hmm.
Wow.
Change of heart there.
So when's the last time your mayor went from comparing gays to bestiality to supporting your right to a divorce?
Well, I don't recall her ever doing the former. But she is pretty conservative, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over 1 million people attend. And not only LGBT people, but lots of allies from local families, businesses, governments, and Britain's outlying cities, as well as straight folks just looking to party down with the queers.
How big is it? The parade.
I don't know the distance of it there. In Trafalgar Square, this crowd stood about 15 deep from the barricade. A lot of them couldn't even see the parade, but stuck around anyway.
Hmm.
And after the parade, you couldn't walk through Soho streets without coming into contact with thousands of LGBT folks from around the world.
It must be pretty long, I mean, to attract 1 million people.
Mm-hmm.
A million people lining a parade route.
I do have to say, 15 deep.
It's got to be a couple of miles.
There are some people at a pride parade who they're right against the barrier and they still can't see it straight.
And they're soccer fans, so they're used to being pressed up against the gate because they have to put a fence around the fields there so that people don't jump.
Sounds like more fun than being in it.
number three.
Okay,
they keep the crazies penned up. A lot of local prides employ police to keep the anti-gay religious nuts from pissing on our parades, and sometimes not even that. But only London bobbies cage all the whack jobs in one small area so they can enjoy the parade while being mocked by its many participants.
Oh, I love them.
I love it. That way the haters can only spread their message of bigoted intolerance to a single street corner, and we can take pictures of us mooning them or making out next to their vague, hard-to-read signs condemning queer love. Who are the cage animals now?
Well, that's pretty funny, but, you know, we usually just get a couple of them, and they're all together. Yeah, they stay for 10 minutes, and then they leave.
Oh, wait a minute. Here's an answer to part answer to Jimmy's question. They march down two of London's busiest streets.
Mm-hmm.
The parade goes through Oxford Street and Regent Street, two of the highest trafficked and highest earning streets in London. The city closes off these two roads just to celebrate Pride is amazing enough.
Wow.
But when you actually walk the parade, as I did, you notice the historic and cultural significance of walking with a bunch of queers through London's business district,
yeah.
Piccadilly Circus, Trafalgar Square, past the National Gallery and Scotland Yard.
That's pretty long.
Indeed, the city's appreciation of its queer citizens amounts to much more than just a parade full of lip service and advertising. Even if the country's equality minister is a homophobe. Yeah, the phone's ringing. We're not answering phone calls.
Oh, okay.
We never do during roundtable.
Okay.
Hang up the phone and call us after the show.
Or send us an email.
There you go.
And the fifth reason, the entire city celebrates. Apart from the parade itself, the numerous community groups marching in it, and the related art, cabaret, and cultural events across the city, London lights up both the National Theatre and the London Eye, the huge Ferris wheel beside the Thames River, in rainbow colors.
Ooh. Oh, nice.
It's kind of like when New York lights up the Empire State Building for Pride.
Yeah, exactly.
Except the London Eye and the National Theatre form a huge part of the London skyline. You can see them a long ways out.
That's nice.
Even non-LGBTQAs must see them and know what's up.
What's an A?
Allies. No.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Hey, good one. No wonder the city got chosen to host 2012 World Pride right between the Queen's Diamond Jubilee and the Summer Olympic Games.
And that's actually kind of pretty, too, the way they got the London Eye lit up.
Because
it's huge and circular, and it starts off with the red and goes around, and it gets about halfway, and it starts over.
And comes
the rest of the way. So it's got two rainbows on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a much more interesting story than the Queen about to become a great-grandmother.
Anyway. Yeah, my father was asking about it because somebody was making fun of the fact that apparently she had gas. And they were, when she was giving a speech, you could hear her, you know, tooting or belching. And that. It's like,
well,
she's 80-something years old.
Yeah, she can.
She can be excused for that.
Yeah.
Gaseous anomalies are normal.
At least she didn't.
That's part of Southern, at least she didn't fall
over dead while she was trying to talk.
Part of Southern culture: old women and men can fart if they want to in public. Yeah. You know, they.
That's why we excuse Jimmy every time.
Exactly.
Being a fake girlfriend has a profitable potential. Get paid $16 an hour to be my pretend girlfriend, reads the Craigslist ad.
Oh, my goodness.
No touching ever.
No, just $16, though?
$16 an hour.
An hour, honey. The context is depressingly plain, but in other situations, some ladies could find this to be a profitable opportunity. My parents are coming to town, and while they're here, they want to meet my girlfriend, who I don't really have since I'm gay. Oh, my. I need someone to play my girlfriend while they're in town.
Oh, just come out, Mary, and save your money.
Oh, come on. Put your boyfriend in a dress.
That's a fabulous La Caja Fall moment.
Yes. I know, right?
You need to be quick on your feet, have a good sense of humor, and the ability to roll with most conversations. They don't know much about you, which will make it easier, but they will be expecting you to be easygoing and fun to be around. They will be in and out of town for the next few months, so if you can pull this off, this could be a recurring role for you.
Whoa.
You need to be cute, thin, between 25 and 35. I think someone in marketing PR circle might be perfect for this kind of, maybe perfect kind of candidate for this job.
So no fats, no femmes?
Yeah,
I live in the Willow Glen neighborhood of San Jose, and you'll need to be able to pop in or hang out or sometimes go to dinner to basically have a good time. So the closer you live to San Jose, the easier it will be on your travel time and the ability to just pop in. If you think you're interested in this, please send a recent photo, a description of yourself, and tell me why you'd like this job. Thanks, Ed. The tipster who sent...
Ed is just... come out of the closet.
Closets
were closed.
The tipster who sent Jezebel, which is the website I got this from, who sent this ad to us, correctly pointed out it's kind of sad. While we're in no position to judge the poster's decision to conceal his sexuality from his parents, it's interesting that he feels the need to perform this concealment using a cute, thin beard.
Yeah.
Whether the girlfriend is fake or not, the male, gay, or straight, it seems a perception still exists that a certain standard of beauty may ease the often awkward meet-the-parent situation. By looking beyond this situation, some women may see an opportunity. For conventional, attractive, easygoing, somewhat unscrupulous women with good acting skills, pretend girlfriend could be a whole new career. This job market is not just limited to the likes of Delmot McGrooney. Being a sugar baby is so over anyway. And in the era, Splenda Babe is nigh.
Splenda Babe?
Yeah. A woman can make her own money, after all, and helping dudes play straight is far from her only potential gig. In fact, there's all sorts of pretend girlfriend opportunities. For example, making high school boys look cool. Dorky 10th graders, dump your girlfriend in Canada and get a real fake girlfriend. Breaking up with your real girlfriend. For the fans of a messy breakup, the pretend girlfriend's just the trick. The senior in bed with your soon-to-be ex, the pretend barges in yelling that she knew what was going on with someone, and how can you throw away your 4 years together? There's hiding your sordid past. Maybe you've gotten out of the slammer like the guy in Buffalo 66, or maybe you spent the last few years doing something he now recognizes vaguely creepily, like direct email marketing. Lending a veneer of social acceptability. Homosexuality is not the only pretend girlfriends can hide. Maybe you're poly. Maybe your family's Mormon.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
Or your real girlfriend is heavily tattooed front woman for the band Dolls and... I can't say that word.
Okay.
starts with a C.
And ends with unts.
Oh!
But you've been invited to tea or with the provost. Or your significant other fails to meet socially accepted beauty standards and you or everyone you know is shallow.
I'd say get better friends.
That's funny. That is funny.
So, now our final story.
Okay.
Just in the nick of time.
From England, a 30-year-old woman's death as she used a sex toy while watching pornography was probably due to her state of sexual excitement. An inquest heard today.
What?
Children's nanny Nicolo Pagadin was found dead in her bed, naked from the waist down last October, with pornographic material running on her laptop. A sex toy was discovered next to her. A home office pathologist told the inquest in Gloucester that Miss Paddington died from a sudden heart arrhythmia, probably brought on by her state of arousal. Gloucestershire coroner Alan Crickmore agreed that it was most likely that, quote, her activity before death contributed to her fatal arrhythmia. The inquest heard that Miss Paddington of Stirlingshire was found dead in October last year. Detective Sergeant Gavin Webb said the police had been called by her employer, Sarah Griffiths, who had visited Miss Paddington's home when she failed to turn up for work. When there was no reply at the door, she enlisted the help of neighbor Michelle Grant, and they saw Miss Paddington through the curtains, lying in her bed with her cat lying on her chest. After they broke in, they realized Miss Paddington was dead, said Sergeant Webb. She had a computer on her lap, and when they moved it and lifted the duvet, they found she was naked from the waist down, and there was a vibrator in the bed. The laptop was still displaying the pornographic material.
Wow.
Home office pathologist Dr. Richard Jones from the University of Cardiff said there's still nothing to explain why she died this way, but I suspect sudden cardiac death. Returning a verdict of death from natural causes, Mr. Crickmore said, I am satisfied Nicola Pagden died of natural disease process.
That must have been one hell of an orgasm.
Oh, yeah. And they said women don't have orgasms.
It's not always possible to determine exact cause of death, but it's likely her activity before death contributed to it.
You think?
You know, it's nice to see finally, you know, someone dies
happy
by masturbation, and it doesn't involve autoerotic asphyxiation. Didn't involve a rope. So congratulations to her. No information on the size of the toy that caused that, or if there's going to be a recall.
and
I imagine there's
going to
be a demand for that toy.
Yeah. Well, you know, it may have been the Jeff Stryker dildo. You know that.
There is that.
That's hard to take.
Chad Hunt, maybe. Yep.
So, that concludes our... I thought that was a cute one to end with.
Yes.
Good night, kids.
Good night, kids.
This has been After Hours. Coming up at the top of the hour is Zydeco Pasale.
Oh, and they are in the house ready to go.
If you want to get in contact with us here, there's a couple ways you can do it. You can join our Facebook. It's facebook.com/afterhours. Send us an email at afterhours@kpft.org. Send us snail mail at afterhours care of KPFT, 419 Lovett Boulevard.
L-O-V-E-T-T. Love, T-T.
Houston, Texas, 77006.
Not just a zip code, but a life.
We'd love hearing from you. News stories, upcoming events, love mail, hate mail.
Dirty pictures!
And, like I said, get in contact with us. If you want to get in contact with our MBBs, send the information along the same way. We'll get it forwarded on, and we will play middleman for you. As I said, Zydeco Basile, followed by the Red Eye Special.
Oh, yeah.
This is KPFT Houston. Get ready.
KPFT Houston would like to remind you that listener candidate opportunities are still open for the KPFT Local Station Board. The candidates in this election are members just like you who would like to help keep the Pacifica Radio Network alive by making important decisions with respect to ensuring local community needs are being prioritized. Candidate deadline has been extended to July 19th. Candidate packets are available at PacificaElections2010.org or by visiting the KPFT offices at 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas 77006. If you need petition signatures, consider attending KPFT meetings and events before the deadline. You can find a listing of these events and meetings by visiting KPFT.org. Pacifica's principles inspire us to strive for diversity, and we encourage members of our diverse community to consider being a part of this board. This is KPFT Houston.
This is Mumia Abu-Jamal with a special message for you, Pacifica listeners. This is not a plea for money, although it'll be great for you to drop some, but a call for you to lend something far more precious. You. Why not run as a candidate for your local Pacifica station board? Nominating packages are available at PacificaElections2010.org. Why not be a part of the solution?
You can run as a candidate for KPFT's local station board until Monday, July 19th. Contact local election supervisor Kathy Kidd by calling 281-668-8854 or email les_kpft@kpft.org.